Good evening, everyone. The Carrville Board of Aldermen meeting for February 21st, 2012. And I believe the first item for this evening is that we have a charge for Charlie Heilman. Could you come forward, please?
Hi, Charlie. I'll read this to you, and if you agree, you can sign it and then meet the board, but you're probably familiar with most of them.
Hi, Charlie.
As a member of the Greenways Commission, I recognize and honor that in the town of Carrville, greenways are unbroken chains of preserved open space surrounding stream and wildlife corridors, headwaters, water recharge areas, and significant ecosystems that also provide bicycle and pedestrian connections between neighborhoods and for the community. As such, I will, 1, recommend to the board policies, programs, and actions that may assist the town in safeguarding the water quality, environment, and livability of the community by establishing greenways. And 2, I will also encourage effective stewardship and management of such greenways and promote educational, recreational, and public health usage consistent with the protection of this resource. Get your signature, please. Thank you.
Is there anyone here this evening to speak on a matter that's not on the printed agenda? Not seeing any. We have no resolutions or proclamations. Mr. Manager, could you go for the consent agenda?
Item number 1 is approval of minutes at the previous meeting. Item number 2 is a follow-up to a request from Community Home Trust and request to set a public hearing on a LUA text amendment relating to the definition of affordable units. Item number 3 is a request to set a public hearing on a conditional use rezoning and conditional use permit application for 201 North Greensboro Street. Item number 4 is an amendment to the FY1112 annual budget ordinance to recognize additional SIA grant funds. Item number 5 is an amendment to the FY1112 annual budget ordinance for sidewalk bond projects. Item number 6 is a request to set a public hearing to obtain community input on the FY1213 budget.
Move the consent agenda.
Can I pull 4 and 5 for 2 quick questions?
Okay, do we have a motion excluding 4 and 5?
So moved. Second.
All in favor of the motion is for items 1, 2, 3, and 6.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Sammy, number 4.
Yeah, I just wanted to, I don't even need a response. I just wanted to make sure that we advertise or have at least on the website the multifamily info more readily available and clear. I don't know if it's been updated, but I was there 2 weeks ago trying to see what information there was, and it wasn't too descriptive, so if we could just make that readily accessible. And then I was just wondering about on item 5 what the cause for the increment in cost is. Just wanted a quick answer from staff if there's
this is serious business.
Yes, it is. That's why I really called you, wanted to know. Why did you get me on camera?
We've always thought of George as our party.
As you were asking about on Elm Street.
The sidewalk, yeah. Yes. It went from 16 to 66.
The increase, I don't have off the top of my head, but the increase was due to the fact that we had to wait quite a while for NCDOT to approve it. This job was supposed to have been let last fall. And then we also were dealing with soil contamination issues and had to make some modifications in the plans.
Oh,
so
right.
All
this
that
is
was
the one near the, what used to be dry cleaner?
That's correct, yes.
Right. Okay,
right.
Got it.
So those are the reasons.
Great. Thank you, George.
Thanks, George. Is there a motion for items 4 and 5?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor, second.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Matters passed unanimously. Matt, item D1.
Item number 1 is a follow-up discussion regarding the Baldwin Park garden expansion, rain catchment, and signage proposal. I believe the Gardeners have a short presentation, and staff is available to answer any questions you may have.
Reed, will you be speaking for the Gardeners?
Yes. Hi, good evening. My name is Reed Palmer. Just before I get started, I just wanted to thank everybody that came out to the garden this weekend. We really appreciate that you came out to see our project, and we know that this dialogue is going to make the project better, so thank you very much. I was asked by a couple of the board members to come up with a schematic showing how we're going to get the water from the shelter to the cistern. So this figure, I think everybody's seen before, more or less, looking at the aerial view of the park with the shelter. The pipe that we proposed to bury made out of PVC running down into the northwest corner of the existing garden and putting the cistern slightly outside of the 30-foot buffer that we now know that it needs to be placed outside of. So before I show a profile of this to show how it's going to get there by gravity, I just want to go over really briefly how fluid flow works. You know, if we're at rest and we've got a pipe and it's full of water, the water's going to come to an equal level throughout the pipe. Now, if I start adding water on the left side, it's going to flow out at the right side. And the reason is it's no longer level in the pipe. It's not at equilibrium anymore. And this difference in height is what we call in fluid dynamics head. And the rate that the water is going to flow through this pipe is controlled by mainly two factors. It's going to be the head of the water, height differential, and the size of the pipe, the diameter of the pipe. There's some other factors that come into play, too, but they're much more minor. They're, you know, fittings, elbows, tees, and also the roughness of the pipe. So now I'll move on and show a profile of what we've got going on. And this isn't exactly to scale, but if we're standing on Broad Street and looking at the park, we see the shelter on the south side of the park up on higher ground, and, you know, the ground's coming down toward the garden. And to where we propose to put the cistern is a significantly lower grade. So what's going to happen is rain's going to fall on the roof. It's going to pass through the gutters that I've put, you know, in a yellow line there, and it's going to pass into the PVC pipe. We'll have an adapter from the downspout into the gutter. And then it's going to flow by gravity down until it gets right next to the cistern, at which point it'll come up and flow into the cistern. And then we'll also have a clean-out valve down here as well so that we can clean out this pipe if for any reason, you know, debris gets into it. And the reason it's going to flow by gravity is because the cistern is going to be placed lower than the foundation of the shelter. In fact, it would still flow by gravity if it was lower than the gutters. So we've actually got a safety factor in there as well. Matthew Campbell, who's a contractor, he's got a laser level, and he marked on the northwest fence post and figured out that it's almost 7 feet of height differential between the foundation up at the shelter and this area near where we're gonna where we propose to put the cistern, if that's acceptable to everyone. So we would want to, the important thing would be to put this pipe here would need to be, you know, below the gutters, and it's going to be well below the gutters. In fact, the way we're proposing, it'll be below the foundation of the shelter so that when it's done raining, there won't even be water above grade over at the shelter. The entrance to the cistern is 4.5 feet off the ground, 54 inches. And we'd like to put it up on a base that's about 15 inches high because your standard 5-gallon bucket is 15 inches high. So now we're getting pretty close to 6 feet, so there's not a whole lot of difference now left to keep that pipe under the grade, but we can do it. And then just to show you, you know, the calculations that I went through to make sure this minimal height differential, and I propose we put it at least 6 inches below grade. This pipe be 6 inches below grade at the shelter. Again, to repeat, there's, you know, 7 feet of safety margin here before the water would ever back up into the gutters. So I looked at some rainfall intensities in this area and picked the shortest duration, which is as hard as it can rain. And if you look way over on the right at that 100-year, once in 100 years around here, they say it'll rain 8/10 of an inch in 5 minutes, which is an incredible rate of rainfall. And I looked at some of these design storms, the 2-year, the 10-year, and the 100-year, make sure we can get the water from the shelter into the cistern. And so that's the next chart I'm going to show you is how much of that head differential we'd need to get these design storms through that pipe. Starting out, if we just look at a steady hard rain of an inch per hour, that would produce 7 to 8 gallons per minute on the roof, and you'd need 2/10 of an inch to drive that water into the cistern. Hardly anything at all. This is through a 4-inch PVC pipe. If you look at that 2-year hardest rain, that would be 43 gallons per minute, and you'd need 5.2 inches. And I've factored in a little extra roughness for not-so-new pipe after it's in the field for a while and all the fittings that are going to be in here. And like I said, I propose that we put it 6 inches below grade. So then we look at this 10-year and 100-year, we're talking 8 inches or 1 foot and 2 inches above that pipe. But still, that would just be maybe a little bit above this adapter. And, yeah, maybe a few drops of water would come out, but we can caulk it and even minimize that. But, I mean, it's nothing compared to what's coming off that roof now in a rainstorm. So that's all I have. I'm happy to answer any questions. Again, if I go back to this figure, I'm just proposing that we set this up so we keep this pipe about 6 inches below grade. And, again, Matthew Campbell's got a laser level, so we can make that happen.
Just one question. When the cistern fills, how will it be prevented from backing up? Is there...
Yeah, there's a... I didn't put it on this diagram, but there's an overflow pipe that comes out. And the overflow pipe's at 42 inches high, so it's actually a full foot below where it's coming in here. So, it would come out. And I sent an email to Anita yesterday to discuss where it might drain to. But, yeah, it won't back up into the pipe and cause any backup at the shelter.
Any other questions? Jackie?
Just for clarity, you are an engineer, right?
Yeah, I'm a registered professional engineer in North Carolina.
Exactly. And you've been involved in designing this, and you would be involved if it was approved in actually building it, right?
Yes, I live on Broad Street and I've been an active gardener for the last 10 years.
And the only reason that you can't sign off on this is because that's kind of outside the realm of what your firm does, and your job doesn't allow you to sign off on it. But this is your best professional design and judgment, right?
That's correct. Great. Yeah. As we, Jackie's mentioned, we had a discussion when we were at the garden. I work for a professional engineering firm in the area, and I do stuff like this for a living, but they say that I'm not supposed to do signed engineering work outside of the firm.
Which is understandable, but...
And if I had to, I might be able to ask them, or we may have to hire somebody.
Not asking for that. I just wanted to establish that, you know, you're not somebody who this is a hobby. You this is what you do, and you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you.
But even if it was a hobby, that was pretty impressive.
That's a pretty good hobby, yeah.
Thank you.
Pretty serious geek out. All right. Olivia.
Indeed.
Dan and Olivia.
Thank you, Lydia. Are you also requesting an expansion of the garden space this evening?
We are. Yes. Okay. We wanted to extend it. I believe at the last meeting, it was approved 25 feet or 30 feet. I don't recall. It was 25 or 30, but we had hoped to get it up to 45 feet. And I don't have that figure with me, but if I go back to this first figure up here, you know, it was 45 feet to the north. And we looked at that. 45 feet is right at the drip line of a tree. And we talked with an arborist who said it was okay. I don't know. I know Matthew talked to him directly if you're interested in hearing what the arborist had to say.
We have remarks from staff about how, you know, it's fine as long as you stay out of the drip line.
Okay, so you're requesting
you're aware of that.
The 45
feet. 45 feet, which
and
is...
And if we make that contingent on that it also be outside the drip line, that would make sense to you all. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Reed, I wanted to know if you could address, as far as you know, how the Owosso easement may or may not impact, you know, how you would install this system.
So Owosso's easement runs kind of out of the page here, right up near the shelter, and my understanding is it's 30 feet wide, and they've asked that we put the PVC tube in a ductile iron pipe over the easements because they have heavy equipment that may come in on occasion, and they'd be concerned that they would crush that pipe. Their sewer runs 6 or 7 feet underground, and we're only talking about going a foot down, so we're not going to have any conflict there. And I believe we've acquired the 6-inch ductile iron pipe, so we have that, and that would be a sleeve that would go around the smaller 4-inch PVC pipe.
All right, thanks.
I have one other. Go ahead.
Thank you for Saturday. It was awesome. It was absolutely awesome. And Saturday I asked a question that maybe Anita had gotten a question to, and that was at the creek. There was the French perforated pipe. Do we ever establish what that was? And
it's in the response that's at your place.
Okay. Oh, all right. And thank you for the slides.
Thank you.
Okay.
That's great.
So Public Works has not yet investigated this, but the perforated pipe most likely carries water away from the gravel area adjacent to the shelter where the water falls to the edge of the roof. If gutters are installed on the shelter, the drains would reduce the amount of water going into this drain. It would seem to not have an impact on the proposed project. So.
Go ahead.
I have a question for Anita.
If you have a question, go ahead.
I have a
comment.
I wanted to ask, I was out there a couple weeks ago, and how big is the park?
It's 2.5 acres.
And how much is this, how much would this, if it went to 45?
It's 50,
how much of that would it take
It's 50% additional space than it's taking up now.
I'm wondering, like, does it take up half of the park?
What are the dimensions wind up being?
If we go back to the picture, I think it would show that.
I think it'll be 40. Hold on just a second. I apologize. I wasn't prepared to answer that.
No problem.
Yeah.
Matthew calculated this a couple weeks ago and figured out that it would be 5.9% of the total space in the park.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. 5.9%?
Don't you love having geek gardeners?
That's correct, of the total square footage of the park.
Okay. Thank you.
Who can remind me what the cost of the sign was supposed to be?
$200.
$200, is that right?
The question of the shed is still in play, right?
That's what this presentation is going to address,
oh,
the
I'm
street
sorry.
Buffers and the shed's placement.
Yeah. Yeah, I just wanted to mention also in your packets is a copy of this aerial map that shows that the majority of the park is in the stream buffer. So wanted to mention that.
Anita, is this lower section part of the park also?
No, the park.
Right, the park is the two blue lines, rectangles together. Is that accurate?
Well, it's a little longer.
The
it's
property
probably,
line.
It's probably about down this area.
Oh, okay.
And then the line over, the red line over
two. I'm just confused because it says the blue line is Baldwin Park. Oh, I guess it's 406 and 410. Is that Baldwin Park or are those neighboring lots?
Trish,
yes.
Can you answer that? But those are neighboring lots. The two that you're talking about are neighboring lots.
Oops, sorry. I'm just going to point on here, I think. You're using this. So, yeah, these are the, right, these are the boundaries of the park, these two lots. And the other two properties that are shown on here were just referenced in the agenda items, so that's why they're outlined.
Okay, so the stream buffers are in half of the property, not most of it.
Yeah, they're probably a little bit over half because of this one going up on this side up to the, I mean, we didn't calculate a percentage.
Right, okay.
But there is some on this more southern lot near the pavilion.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any questions for staff?
I think the other question that Sammy had just in follow up was the solution to the shed. When I was out there Friday, the talk was to put the shed inside the fence to both protect the shed and is that what other people were hearing?
That's not what I heard.
Okay.
I heard they were putting it outside the south side of the fence with a cutaway for the shed to open into the garden.
Right,
that
okay.
That's what they're requesting.
Yeah.
Is that correct, y'all?
Yes, yes.
So it's kind of in and out of it.
Right.
It sticks out of the fence, but it's only accessible from inside the fence.
Right.
Which seems very reasonable. I think we're ready to move forward. There are people who have seeds to plant, and I think we have a good plan. I'm very much in favor of motioning that the garden group be allowed to build the, it seems like, you know, an engineer has designed it. They have a licensed contractor who's going to help them build it. They're very serious people. If you go out there, it looks great. Community's participating. I don't see any reason not to let this happen. So I'd like to move that we empower the Baldwin Park Gardening Group to run the line from the shed to their cistern, to expand the garden as long as it does not enter into the drip line of the tree, and to move the shed so that the door will open in, like, so it's right outside the fence and the door will open inside the fence.
On the southeast corner.
Yes, on the southeast corner.
I'll second that.
Thank you,
and,
Dan.
I want to raise one other possibility. I think the gardeners are investing a whole lot into improving this park through this putting the system in, and I wonder how the board would work. Would you feel including the town paying for that sign?
I would accept that as part of the motion.
Okay, and I'll accept that as the second.
Thank you.
Lydia?
Yeah, I wanted to say that I'm inclined to support Jackie's motion. And the reason is, since our last meeting, I've tried to do a lot of independent research on, first of all, the use of volunteers in various capacities with towns, but predominantly in parks and recreation-type activities, because those are what I'm familiar with, and also this, in some departments or in some cities, falls under that auspice. And I also found, you know, a lot of literature out there, a lot specifically about community gardens and how they present unique challenges, but they also connect. They also present very, very, very good benefits. And each community has had to, I'll say, grapple with it in their own way, not just system-wide, but even park to park, like mm-hmm. we're doing here. And I think that the vast majority of what I saw and read were that in communities that supported community gardening, it was a partnership to some degree between the city in that, in many cases, in that perhaps it was on city land, perhaps the city provided some assistance as far as they could in helping with the garden. But in some, they also were purely private-public. It just kind of depended on the particular municipality. But it certainly seems, I know the other thing I was going to say, was after our last meeting, I think there was a sense of frustration here that we had what seemed to be very qualified, willing, and able volunteers who wanted to go out and do this, and yet we're very concerned, as we should be, about liability. They took the time to meet with all of us in the appropriate numbers and explain to us in great detail how they were going to try to do this. They obviously have a lot of expertise, which a lot of what I've read, when you have, you know, there's, I think it makes sense to use volunteers that have expertise in some areas. And so with regard to this particular part, I think I'm in favor of moving forward with it.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I also want to echo and appreciate other board members recognizing how valuable this garden is for our community, but also in general, just the way in which we have community members who are so involved in creating such spaces. These are perfect opportunities that we'll probably see more of as towns throughout the country actually start seeing less funds to do things that community expects. So it will become more and more a challenge for us to find creative ways in which to use our community's energy. And for a town like Carrboro, with such talented people, I think it's something we should really maximize as much as we can.
I just wanted to add that I really appreciate the time that you took on Saturday, not only to answer our questions, but you know, work together collaboratively to think through some of the other possibilities. It's a very exciting project.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I just add one note that you might include in your motion, if possible, because of the it's pretty tight out there, and I just think it's important to recognize how close I think that this is a matter of just where the shed is placed, if it is indeed placed. Clarify, you know, if you mean on the southeast side here or here, but also the measurements in GIS suggest there's only about 8 feet from the corner of the garden as it's shown here to the edge of the buffer. Mm-hmm. This is not a survey, but it will need to be field verified, I think, the location of the shed in relation to the buffer. It is a provision in our ordinance. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if you could perhaps consider that as part of clarification of the motion.
I would just add that the shed must be placed in such a manner that it is outside of the stream buffer.
Gardeners, does either side of that corner work for you?
They've looked at that.
We can't put it on the east side because that's the old Wassa.
Right.
Okay, so it has to be on the south side in that corner.
It has to be on the south side, and we know that the shed is 6 feet plus or minus, and if there's an 8-foot space, then we should be able to put it right in that space.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's close, but it'll get there.
I think they've looked at that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Thanks.
That's great.
Thanks.
All right. So I believe the net effect is that we have a motion and a second.
We do.
I'm just sad. I think a number of you may have seen. I mentioned something on Facebook recently about a town in Scotland that had adopted a much more aggressive strategy, actually, in this direction, and with interesting benefits
and I commend that to your attention if you haven't seen it yet. But anyway, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously.
See how much different government is at 8 p.m. than at midnight? Yeah.
That was the problem.
Compared with 11:30.
Save me some broccoli.
Great.
We're nicer.
Good work. Thanks, y'all. I believe that brings us to agenda item D2. I'm assuming there's not a staff presentation.
There's not. Now is just the opportunity for the mayor and board to discuss appointments to the advisory boards.
Okay.
All right.
Should we post?
Are there any motions or?
What if we just go?
Go ahead.
I would like to, when we get to the greenways, before we get into the particulars of the appointments, if we could spend a few minutes talking about the process of how we make those appointments. All right. Lydia, did you have a motion?
No.
Oh. Just wave.
Just wave me. With her Mardi Gras beads.
All right.
Just start at the top?
Yes. Somebody make a motion.
I'd like to move that we appoint Richard Ellington, Catherine Devine, and Joseph Collins to the Board of Adjustment.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? If not, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the matter passes unanimously.
That was the easy one.
All right. Make a harder one.
I move that we appoint nobody to the ETJC for the Board of Adjustment.
Second that.
Been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously.
Now, Planning Board.
I move we appoint Adam Schaefer, Braxton Fushi, Jessica Frohr, and Richard Jamie Field.
I'll second.
Second.
Sorry, so that was Richard Jamie Field, Jessica Frohr,
Braxton Fushi,
and Adam Schaefer.
And Dan seconded right. That?
I did.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Hearing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously.
I'll move Seth Lejeune. I don't know how to pronounce
this.
You're skipping the hearings committee.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Well, appearance I'll move commission. To appoint all of the applicants, Sarah Andrews and Raymond Conrad, for the appearance commission.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion?
Are those the seats expiring in 2015?
Why don't we
put both of them to the 2014 seat?
Sure.
Okay. Does that make sense? That does. Usually these appointments are for 3 years. Just want to throw that out there. These are the annual February appointments, so making those appointments to the 2014 seats would be making appointments to vacant, unexpired terms. So
Let's do it that way for the moment.
Sure.
Yeah. Suggest.
I'm okay with that.
All right. It's been moved by Sammy. Is there a second?
I second it.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passed unanimously.
And I'll move to appoint Seth to the Transportation Advisory Board.
Second it.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously.
I'd like to move that we appoint Cassandra Hayen.
Maybe.
And Eric Allman to the 2015 seats of the Parks and Rec Commission, Victoria Dene to the 2014 seat, and Doris Morrell to the 2013 seat of the Recreation.
I want to make a comment.
Go ahead.
I'm going to vote against this because we have a longstanding policy of two terms unless there are extenuating circumstances. I think, Doris Morrell, who's done wonderful service on recreation and parks, has been there for a long time, and we do have another applicant who could take that seat. And so it's my belief that we should make the change at this time and, you know, show our appreciation to Doris for her service. But I think we have that policy, and unless someone has an compelling argument of why we shouldn't follow it, I'm going to vote against the motion.
Okay, I hear you, but I keep the motion as stands. The other applicant did not come to any meetings.
All right, anybody have a novel comment on this topic?
I also think the other applicant, if I remember right, has only lived here a month or two, just kind of getting their feet wet in the town.
And, of course, Doris has enormous experience, although, you know, I see the concern about having some new blood, but when you compare it to, you know, someone without the experience, I think Doris should be reappointed.
Jennifer's been here for more than a month. Like, her application came in in August. And I agree with Dan. I'm going to support an alternative to that proposal, just because I do think it is important. And though I've been on the Recreation and Parks Commission and value Doris's longstanding commitment and her contribution to that board and all the time she's given to it, I do think it's important to, and the whole time I was there, we've never had an opportunity where we had a choice, like this many people applying for the for this board, this commission, so it's a great opportunity that I think we should take advantage of.
The reason I thought she was here a month was because she said she lived here a month, but now I see up above it was dated August. So right. That's where I was dated a month. So
she had lived here a month
in
when
August.
She applied.
Right.
Okay. So the motion was from, remind me who made the motion.
I did.
Jackie made the motion, which was Doris Morrell for the 2013 seat. Who was the 2014 seat?
Victoria.
Victoria Dene, and then the 2015 seat was
Cassandra and Eric.
Cassandra Hain and Eric Allman.
Allman, yeah.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
No.
All right, the matter passes 5-2. Who was the seconder on that, by the way?
I was.
Okay, thanks very much. All right, let's skip down to Human Services Commission. Is there a motion?
I'll move to appoint Daniel Grubman, Patricia Young, and Mary Weiss to the Human Services Commission.
Second.
Right. Been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously. ESC.
So on the ESC, our motion needs to include designating Jennifer McMillan as the downtown resident, because none of the new people are downtown resident, but she is.
Because she's not on this.
She's not on the list for some reason.
No, she's a serving member.
Oh, okay.
I see.
So, but
gotcha.
She's not designated as the downtown. But
gotcha.
What the town code says is there needs to be a downtown resident. It doesn't mean you need to appoint someone specifically saying that. We just need to have one.
All right. And she lives on Oak Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Downtown.
Right. And so I would include that in the motion, plus the appointment of the Sarah Blackman, Arthur Ramsey, and Christopher Butler, with Bevan being the business owner among that group.
It doesn't look, the version of the agenda I'm looking at doesn't give that many spaces.
There are three.
Jenny out of there. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, because
Jenny's already there.
It's just the part about Jenny is just a clarification.
Okay. And so then, which of them is being appointed to which of these seats?
So Jenny's downtown.
Jenny's the downtown resident, but she's not being appointed. She's already there.
We're just moving her.
Right.
Okay.
So Bevan is the business owner, and the other two are at large.
At large.
Okay.
So includes all, it's just...
All right, I find that slightly... Oh, because Jenny...
Just
Jenny is currently at large.
Right.
I got you.
She's switching her designation.
Because it says one seat at large here, but it'd be two. But,
okay. Yes, exactly.
All right, great.
Sorry.
All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously. Thanks.
Can I? Who seconded that motion?
I'll second it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Environmental Advisory Board, two seats.
I'd like to appoint Matthew Hornsberger and Jeff Gisler.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously. Arts Committee?
With the Arts Committee, I have an odd motion. I'd like to move that we appoint Clara Jackson and Chris Beecham, but I've been asked to ask if we could please add another seat. I think we can do that without a change to the mm-hmm. ordinance.
Another seat for John Watts specifically.
Yeah.
Mr. Attorney?
I think the Arts Commission is easier to add a seat to.
The proposal here is to appoint all three of these people, although there are only two vacant seats identified right now on the Arts Commission. Is that something we can do, or what?
Appoint three people to sit in two seats? Is that what you're asking?
For the Arts Commission.
Well, it's Mardi Gras, the Mardi Gras exception.
Okay. Alrighty.
I think it doesn't take much in a public hearing to change the membership of the Arts Commission. I mean, you can, in a few minutes, I could pen such an amendment if you want. In other words, if you want to enlarge the Arts Commission, you can do that without much difficulty.
Okay.
If you give me a minute to go find the.
We could continue moving forward and then next week appoint this guy? Or
I take it that the motion is to appoint Clara and Chris.
Yes.
To request the town attorney bring us tonight or later tonight or else on another night an ordinance amendment that would allow for a third person to be appointed to the Arts Committee.
Well, can I ask a question? Do we typically have an Arts Center rep? Because if we don't, maybe we just make that into it, or I don't know.
No, because we're moving towards having that again, and because things have been complicated, that hasn't been active in a while, but we're hoping that in the near future that will be reactive.
And is that someone who works there, or is on their board, or either, or just someone who knows what's going on?
It's generally somebody who works there.
Okay, and so none of these three work?
No.
All right.
No.
And Lydia, just to clarify, that seat is specified by the town code.
Okay.
All right, so the motion is, unless you correct me, that we appoint Clara and Chris and that we request
an additional seat to the Arts Commission.
An additional seat be added.
Yes.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously. All right. Greenways Commission.
Yeah, the concern I want to raise was we had some issues a few years ago about, at the time we were still getting recommendations for advisory board chairs, and there was some discomfort around certain appointments, and it was creating an issue where there was a desire on this board to appoint certain people or not appoint certain people based on the information we had, but also concern about what was really like a personal situation of not wanting to offend a chair who was making a recommendation to want to honor what they were doing. And my own understanding of that history is that the concerns we had about those particular appointments that we didn't act on under those circumstances were in fact borne out subsequently, and Randy and I actually were very involved together in agitating around that, so I'm sort of sure you recall what I'm talking about. And I think we're in the same situation. This is like the last lingering condition of that. It says in the town code, if you read the Greenway section, it says all seats were appointed by the Board of Aldermen. That's very clear. But yet, we have this kind of ambiguous notion of these reps from advisory boards.
And I think what I would like us to discuss is why we need to, whether we need to continue to treat the Greenways Commission from any other advisory board in this way, and if we shouldn't just have the whatever would be, I guess, 9 members as appointed by the Board of Aldermen to serve, and that we would continue in that way into the future. Because we don't do this sort of thing for any other board at this time that I'm aware of, and I just don't see what the need is to continue to do this for the Greenways. So I guess I'd like to hear, you know, if others share that concern and might want to consider that kind of change.
Well, as I understand it, it still is a decision by the board. The asterisks say this is a recommendation. Is that correct?
Right, it's a recommendation, but it's in that vague area. You know, because I, you know, like I got a call from Randy before our last meeting, who was like, "Well, you know, we have to support what these groups are doing because these appointments are important to those members, and we don't." I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you know, it was basically that. I think the word you used was, "We don't want to upset people," and I don't want to upset people either. And I think this is a process that leads us to make decisions on the question of whether or not we might upset someone. That's the wrong way to make a decision for us. We should make a decision on what's in the best interest of the town and what's going to give us a smoothly functioning board. And particularly, you know, our last round of appointments, I think we took care to want to kind of dial things down on the Greenways Commission and make it a board that would have less of a feeling of intensity about it. And so if that's a, you know, if that's a situation where, again, we're being told that decisions on appointments might upset people, I think that's not the direction we're wanting to go in on that. So that's why I feel like we should make this change, that it's just, you know, maybe it won't be a problem this time, but it might be. And I think, you know, we're just asking for it in the future.
I'm sorry, what order? Jackie and then Lydia, thank you.
I appreciate what you're saying, and I think that it merits being looked at. I remember why we decided that we needed these two on the Greenways Commission, and it made sense, and it makes sense that we need input from those groups. I feel that at this point in time, we have asked for a recommendation from those committees to be appointed to the Greenways Commission. I still think that it's valid to have liaisons from those two to the Greenways Commission. So at this point, I would like to support those appointments and have a discussion later on about whether or not that's the way we want to continue to go. But we have already asked them to recommend appointing representatives, and they have done that, and I'm inclined to honor those appointments this evening.
Let me just clarify. I did say to Dan that I thought folks would be upset, specifically folks on the advisory boards, that the majorities put these folks forth. And it's an interesting interpretation that you have. I had a different interpretation of the Greenways charge. And we appointed these folks to their respective boards. That was the appointment. Now their advisory boards are asking them to be representatives to the Greenway Commission. And we are asked to support that. And that's how I see
it. That's not what the town code says.
Well, we've made the initial appointment, and now we made the appointment for them to be on the boards that they're on. They have been recommended to us for approval to the Greenway Commission, and now it is up to us to appoint them to the Greenway Commission.
Or not appoint them.
But my point is that their boards have, their board majorities have chosen them. as representatives, and I support the boards.
Lydia, and then Sammy.
Michelle. Okay, so, well, I think now four of the nine members of the Greenways Commission then are liaisons from our boards. I mean, right now we've got TAB, EAB, there's also Planning Board, and
Rexham Park,
right. So, and I like Randy and Jackie said, I mean, I've always just kind of viewed it as, I don't want to say a rubber stamp, but that's kind of what it is. This is who the commission, this is who they're saying they want to appoint, and that's the way I've done it.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't viewed it. We've only gotten one application. I mean, we've viewed it, I have viewed it in the context of this is their selection for the board, and it's someone we've already approved in some way to sit on one of our boards.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
But I do think that it is presenting a problem now, though, just because of the nature of the way we now evaluate our appointments. You know, when we look at our appointments, and I'm talking specifically about the Greenways Commission because we just went through this last summer, where we really took a very careful, balanced look at trying to look at our guidelines and say, you know, let's have representation on this view, let's have representation from the north, let's have someone brand new or whatever. When we don't look at four of the nine appointments, really, when we only look at them in isolation, it's just, you know, a recommendation of one, it takes away from our ability to do that balance. And so what I would like to suggest is, I'm kind of in agreement that I think we need to make these appointments tonight, but I would be in favor of, by next year, either eliminating these liaisonships and or having these liaisonships become ex officio type memberships where they don't vote, they're just a reporting mechanism back to the board that we maybe don't even have to approve, okay? But I don't think in their current role they meet the spirit of what we're looking for and how we select our advisory board members.
Sammy and then Dan. Sammy and then Michelle and then Dan.
I just want to provide a bit of context for the Transportation Advisory Board, for example, and also because I'm liaison to it, and I'm glad to hear Jackie and Randy recognizing the value of having representation from other environmental and the Transportation Advisory Board. That is valuable to have that kind of representation and liaisons for the Greenways Commissions because those boards have connections, natural connections to what the Greenways Commission represents. And I also want to preface this by pointing out that this is not because I'm in favor of one way or another way for the Greenways to go, specifically with the controversial section that is really at the heart of this. If y'all remember, I was the one who, when we looked at that, brought in or suggested we include both alternative paths as opposed to the one on the creek. So this is not because I'm ambivalent about it, and I really think it's a question for the community. But to share a bit of what the Transportation Advisory Board and how it is that it was unanimous, if y'all remember, it's been a couple of times that the Transportation Advisory Board has not elected anyone or voted for anyone to be on the Greenways Commission, and it's only finally, when there's someone who has a lot of interest and passion to be on the Greenways Commission, that there has been unanimous support for that. There was someone else on the Transportation Advisory Board who was interested in serving on it, but at the time did not bring herself to be noticed by the commission because she felt, you know, there's a lot of energy from the person we're considering tonight. All this to say that if our intention to have a representative on the Greenways Commission from the Transportation Advisory Board and the Environmental Advisory Board is for there to be a true liaison and representation from those boards, it is in my opinion and from the context and what I understand from the dynamics that are happening on the Transportation Advisory Board, that we should postpone assigning anyone from the Transportation Advisory Board to the Greenways Commission, because I feel, and for the same reason that I was wary of assigning this person to the Transportation Advisory Board, even though the experience so far has been great. This person has been a great contributor to the group. There's an obvious sense that anything that was relating to the greenways, there's a priori position. And for that reason, I don't think this is the appropriate person to be a liaison on the Greenways Commission. I think it would be more true to the sentiment behind having representatives on the Greenways Commission to have someone who is not so clearly set on a position for that position.
Michelle. I think Michelle and then Dan.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. No, I said it the wrong order at one point, but
it's okay. This is not really a question. It's just a curiosity about in our packet, the recommendation from TAB was unanimous, but the recommendation from EAB wasn't. And in fact, there were three abstentions to the vote, but five people were there. And I'm curious about that. And, you know, I wasn't on the board in the summer when this discussion happened. I was sitting over there. But from what I understand and know, it seems like there's been a fair amount of rigidity around what people believe on the Greenways Commission. And I'm not sure, and I'm not saying this is a judgment, I'm not sure how much work has gotten done as a result of that. And so I'm not clear whether we need to appoint these people now or not. I just think we need to be mindful of the intention of what the commission is. And I also feel like we need to understand why we're treating this differently than any other advisory board that we have currently. Like, so I'm curious about that as well. And moving forward, would like us to talk about a different process. Do we treat this the same as the other advisory boards? Do we treat this differently? And if so, being really clear and verbal and vocal about why we're doing that.
I'd be interested to know about what other advisory boards we have that have this liaisonship type relationship. But
and it came out
Dan
of
is
board.
Dan's next in the queue.
Right. Well, we have talked about that we have an Art Center rep, but that's the Art Center. On the other hand, you know, like on ESC, you know, we have a business owner seat. You know, obviously that it's not exactly analogous, but, you know, we appoint someone who's a business owner just as, you know, we could appoint someone who has a transportation interest or a particular environmental interest. It doesn't have to be a board member to bring those ideas forward. But the point I wanted to make was partly following up all three people who spoke before me, because I have something to say in regard to each. Because, you know, part of my concern has to do with what Lydia said about what we tried to do with the appointments last summer and to create a new kind of appointments on the Greenways Commission. And when I called Seth a couple weeks ago, because I was really interested in what the discussion was on TAB, and he basically confirmed what Sam just told us. And I asked him very specifically, well, did you know that the TAB members know that Linda Hogg had applied directly to be our Greenways as her first choice, and that the board of aldermen chose not to appoint her? And he replied that, you know, no, they did not know that. So I think, you know, partly I think that, you know, part of my concern is, you know, the advisory boards don't necessarily have all the information. You know, that information might have changed. It might have at least raised a question of, like, in Seth's mind, you know, should he get some, you know, sense of from the board or directly from Sammy on that point. But also what Sammy is recounting is that some of us have been, I think, overstating the power of these recommendations, because, you know, the reason Linda's name is there is because she's enthusiastic, and that the other person who was interested sort of deferred to that enthusiasm. And for us to interpret it as, a strong recommendation of the board, I don't think speaks to the facts. This is even more the case with the EAB, which Michelle was asking about. I don't know if anyone else spoke to Jeff about this, because when I looked at the minutes and I saw there were three abstentions, and so that basically out of six members, we have two supporting this designee, and obviously that's the majority of the vote, but it's a small minority of those present, and that raised a question for me. Why were there so many abstentions? So I called him, and he said to me, well, one person who abstained was Bruce Sinclair, who was just being a nice guy. Now, if Bruce had wanted to promote his own candidacy more aggressively and had voted against Rob, then it would have been a tie vote. And, but Bruce didn't do that. Another abstention was someone who felt they were new to the board and couldn't decide between the two. And the other abstention was someone who thought that they shouldn't vote at all and should do it by lot or something like that. So, again, this is, a really weak recommendation, and you feel like we, as the governing body of the town, is bound by these two I votes out of six present. I just think there's really something wrong with that process.
Let me just ask a procedural question. I mean, at what level, if there are six people present for a meeting and only two people vote in favor of the motion, at what level has it passed?
Well, unless the ordinance specifically provides, as does the statute for this board, that if you don't vote on an issue and if you're not excused, you can count as an affirmative vote, that obviously doesn't apply to all these subsidiary boards. There may be some among the many boards that we have where we provided by ordinance for a similar process, but I'm sure it's not applicable to that particular board. I don't believe it is. So in other words, if you've got a quorum, but you don't get a majority of those four people have abstained or just don't vote or whatever, then it doesn't pass. I mean, if you're a quorum, you'd have to get, you've got six people there and four people abstained, it doesn't pass.
So
this one
so the EAB isn't valid.
Well, I was at the
perhaps. I mean, I guess depending on exactly what it says, but which of you wants to go first? I'm sorry.
I just wanted to come behind what was said. I didn't want it to be left right where it was. Michelle and I, switched seats at the time of the vote on the Environmental Advisory Board, but I had been there two other times when they didn't quite have enough numbers present to vote, but I was there for discussion. And Rob Crook, the reason he was favored by the folks who were there in the discussion was because he was a forester. And they felt like a forester was a natural fit for the Greenway Commission. And that's, the last meeting I went to in early December, that was the discussion that took place. So I don't want that left out of the discussion here. They might not have had the numbers, but they certainly understood the rationale.
Well, and this is why there's a problem with this whole procedure, because you have one person, and I heard from Jeff a different version.
Jackie and then me.
We periodically in this town have put together work groups that have representatives from different advisory boards and the Board of Aldermen running. For instance, when we were putting together the facilitated small area plan, there were representatives on the steering committee for that of various groups. I think there have been a couple other cases where it was a large, kind of all-encompassing issue. And so there were, I think maybe the master plan for recreation and parks had some planning board people on it and would have had some environmental advisory board people on it had we had an environmental advisory board at that point. So there are very rare instances where we ask for that and it makes sense. When the Greenways Commission was formulated, it made sense at that point because it was kind of a widespread undertaking that touched on all these different areas to make sure that we had expertise from our citizens' boards appointed to that. And so that is how that happened. We may have reached a point where that is no longer or will soon not be necessary. However, right now, we have those seats still. We have not had a discussion which has led to us to believe that we do not need them. I believe we still to some degree need them. We have asked our advisory boards to make appointments, to make recommendations. They have done so. I'm very much in favor of supporting the recommendations as they stand. I know there are wildly different opinions on the Greenway, but believe me, I sat through that for several years. I think that is calming down. We need different opinions. We need them to be expressed in a way that will lead to solutions rather than to division. I think we are getting there. But I think at this point for us to not approve the recommendations of these two boards would further the sense of divisiveness and create a whole new scuttlebutt rather than our saying, we ask you for appointments, these are the people you're recommending, therefore those are the people that we're appointing. I think it's perfectly fine for us in a couple months or somewhere when we can get it on the agenda to revisit the makeup of the Greenways Commission and if that is still what we wanted. But as of now, this is how it's functioning, and these are the people who have been recommended. I think they are both good people. I think they bring good stuff to the table. And when this discussion's finished, I'm going to put forth a motion to that effect.
It's me and then Lydia and then Sammy. I think, you know, I guess the problem I'm having is that at some level this is sort of a tempest in a teapot. You know, I don't think, I think the Greenways Commission has been extremely useful, and it's been helpful to have their perspective, and to the extent that they've kind of looked into a variety of issues that go well beyond just the question of sections 3 and 4 of the Bowling Creek Greenway. The question I have at this point is whether there is value to really having a Greenways Commission beyond this point or beyond some point in the near future. You know, in Chapel Hill, they have a standing Greenways Commission. It's a much larger town. It's about 3 times our size. They have Chapel Hill has a much larger town staff, and they have a much more extensive Greenways plan than our town does. And I just want to throw out there the question of, you know, at what point, whether a point will come where we don't necessarily need to have a Greenways Commission for the future. And I think that point is not very far off in the future. That said, I also think there was a lot of careful thought that went into the composition of the appointments in the last Greenways Commission appointment process. And I feel like there are certain people who've attempted a kind of end run here around what the Board of Aldermen
decided last year about how to compose a Green Mesa Commission, and which is, you know, on the one hand, let me say, as an attorney, I really admire the creativity of those who tried to find a way to do indirectly that which you cannot do directly. But on the other hand, as a resident of Carrboro, it gives me some concern. And I think that, it's important for there to be representation from people who live near Bowling Creek and who live in the vicinity of some of the proposed trail alignments. But I also think it's important for there to be a significant representation from the rest of our community as well. The rest of the people who would potentially, who either do use or would potentially use that trail. And so it gives me a concern that both people we're talking about have a very fixed position on this issue, and both the people we're talking about have live, you know, very close to the proposed trail alignment. It seems to me that one of them has a clear recommendation from the advisory board that she's a member of, and the other has a kind of ambiguous level of recommendation from his advisory board. So it would seem reasonable to me to kind of strike a compromise between the two and go ahead and approve the appointment of the one person who clearly had a recommendation from the advisory board that she's a member of, and maybe withhold judgment on the question of the other seat until we've maybe had more of an opportunity to hear from the entire advisory board in question.
Okay.
Lydia and Sammy, and then somebody, for the love of God, make a motion.
I will.
Right. I was just going to ask if Jackie would maybe entertain the idea with her motion, or if others would be supportive of it, that if we appoint, you know, one or both at this time, that we just go ahead and say, you know, next January these four liaison seats will expire, and we only have five on the Greenways Commission. Or I don't think we want to go to the alternative yet of disbanding the commission, although we could reconsider that. But I wouldn't have a need to revisit this again sometime this year. I think that we've made some good arguments here as to why we might not want to continue to put our boards in the position of trying to figure out who can be the liaison. And we're also talking about narrowing the scope of this group. And so that would be my suggestion, too.
So
if possible, have the motion include that.
Can you give me that in a phrase?
It would be just to move the appointment of, I guess, the TAB rep.
Right.
And also to recommend that the four appointments from our liaison commit groups, the Greenways Commission, the TAB, the EAB, Parks and Rec, and the Planning Board, that all four of those positions basically expire.
In January 13th, okay.
2013.
Next year.
Okay.
Sammy. So for me, it's not the issue of whether we have representation from these boards on the Greenways Commission or not, but rather that the representation be reflective of the boards that are liaison to the Greenways Commission. In other words, that the person from the Transportation Advisory Board be truly a liaison and not have an a priori position. And I think that both Randy and Jackie recognize that, and for me it also is problematic to share with the board the nature of why it was a unanimous decision, and the board to continue to just recognize that there was a majority vote from this commission without recognizing what I bring as liaison to this board as for what that vote was really about. It was the fact that from the Transportation Advisory Board, there hasn't been much enthusiasm for anyone, for that matter, to be on the Greenways Commission. So it would be disingenuous to say this is a majority vote from the Transportation Advisory Board without taking into account what I'm telling y'all. As for the question that Mark is making, the point he's making about disbanding eventually this commission, I'm very much in favor of doing that eventually. One of the commissions I'm hoping to have us eventually, hopefully soon, see is one that can deal with climate change, which is, you know, the most urgent issue we have, and you know, historically that the community's ever seen. And we haven't moved since I've been on the board, and we have a resolution speaking to that. And part of it's been because we don't have enough staff to staff such a commission. So I think that climate change is way more pressing of an issue. So as soon as either we disband or find an alternative way to create such a commission, you know, I'm all for that. But for those two reasons, and it's nothing to do with Linda, anything personal. It's just the reality and the intention behind having liaisons from Transportation Advisory Board and Environmental Advisory Board to the Greenways Commission. The intention is that there be an actual representation and that there not be a priori positions for that. So for that reason, I cannot support the Transportation Advisory Board.
The motion I'm going to make.
Randy, and then...
I have one point of clarification. And Jackie and I were designing the seats with staff for the Greenway Commission. Other advisory boards were not initially on it. That morphed over time because we had originally created seats for school representatives and for different neighborhood areas, and it came from this board to, you know, as recommendations that came from this board to, well, why don't we have a more integrated approach with the Greenways Commission to maybe create that kind of balance and create the kind of dialogue back and forth. So I just want to make that point because I don't, you know, we labored long and hard and we weren't thinking about advisory boards representing. We were thinking about community and various stakeholders in the community. So I just want to clarify that the, you know, whether we dismantle that part of it is fine with me because that wasn't the original intent. I think that really muddied things up, and I have no problem doing that. I also want to clarify that when we originally designed the Greenways Commission, it was to, when the greenways were complete, when the greenway plan is complete, it's, you know, it sunsets and will come under the Rex and Park, and that was always in the planning. So I want to make sure that everyone's aware that's the way we were operating.
Okay.
All right. We have one motion from Lydia, which I've not heard a second.
Well, no, I told Jackie.
No.
I suggested.
Okay, I'm just saying I haven't heard a second.
So well, no, she what she was doing was giving me an add-on to a motion that she thought I was going to make.
All right.
Okay.
Do we need a
well, make a motion.
Wait, but Mark also made a recommendation about the EAB's recommendation go back until they...
Well,
do we want to include that or not?
Well,
Just make a motion.
Jackie, you have the floor. Okay.
I have the floor. Thank you. So the Greenways seems to be the gift that keeps on giving to this board, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
I would like to move that this evening we appoint Linda Hawk as the TAB representative to the Greenways Commission, and that next January all four of the liaison positions to the Greenway Commission expire, and that within the next year we have on our agenda a discussion about the future of the Greenways Commission in keeping with Mark's concerns. And that at this time, until we get further clarification, we do not make an EAB appointment.
All right. Well, surely there must be a second to that motion.
Well, I would like to... No, I'm concerned that we're coupling a couple things that, you know, I'm not comfortable making a decision now for next January about the Greenways Commission because we already stand back on how many meetings the Greenway Commission will have. So I'm really not comfortable having a knee-jerk reaction, and that's exactly what we're doing here. If we're making a decision about appointments, that's one thing, but the decision about the Greenway Commission in general, I think that's another discussion. I hate that we're coupling that with this.
Well, the Greenway's discussion is not a discussion with a decision. It's a discussion that this motion says we will have.
Okay. Is there a second to Jackie's motion? All right. It's been moved and seconded. Is there any further debate on that motion? If not, all those in favor of Jackie's motion, which, just to be clear, we'll go ahead and appoint Linda Hawk as TAB liaison, and we'll leave open the question of who the EAB liaison will be, and we'll call for an end to these liaisonships in January and a discussion sometime later this year of the future of the Greenways Commission. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Nay.
The matter passes 5-2. All those in favor signify. Oh, can you already do that part? The matter passes 5-2.
I heard aye. 5-2. I'll second that.
Can I ask a clarifying question?
Yes.
You can, yeah.
You can ask.
You
whether
can
you
ask.
Can answer is a different question.
I'll try to answer. The motion has that the...
Hold on.
Randy, were you in that?
No, she didn't say anything, so that counts as
no,
a
no. I voted.
Okay, sorry. Anyway, it's an aye. Yes.
Kathy?
The liaisonships will expire in January. Do you mean that they will be removed from the Greenways Commission?
There will no longer be liaisons as of...
Right.
So I shouldn't ask them to reapply and...
Correct.
Yeah, yeah, those seats will...
Yeah.
Cease to exist.
And I'll assume that's as of the end of January of 2013.
Thank you.
One more thing on the subject before we move on.
Yes.
There is an agenda item tentatively scheduled for April 10th to review advisory board guidelines, appointments, et cetera. And if you'd like, we can couple this issue.
No, I think it's a standalone. No?
Well, let's... I think the board will... board will give our next town manager advice about that matter, I think.
Could I, Mr. Mayor, could I... Let me just correct real quick.
It's an interesting question to contemplate. Let me just put it that way.
So they said in response to Alderman Cohn's question, I think the answer to your question as to what happens when you've got six members present out of a seven-person board and two and four abstain is going to depend upon the particular board. Like with the TAB, it says all motions require a quorum and they shall be passed by a majority of those present and voting. Mm-hmm. Some other commissions don't have that language, so it's a little bit unclear. But you know, for most of these boards, they're just advisory anyway, so that you take what you will from two votes out of six. You know, so
I think we just did.
Okay. I just don't want to leave that open. And you were requesting an amendment for the Arts Committee?
Yeah.
Is that something you want me to draft?
Go ahead. If you feel that you can do it tonight, that would be great.
I won't be able to. Part of it's easy, and the part that's complicated is you've got staggered terms. You've got a nine-person board right now. You've got three staggered terms, and so it gets...
Bring it back to us.
Just bring it back at your leisure.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
All right. I believe that brings us to item D3 on the revolving loans.
Item D3 is consideration of a request to update the criteria for the Business Revolving Loan Fund and application form. Annette Stone, it's here to answer any questions.
It is.
Just real quickly, good evening. The criteria that we currently have, when I first got here, one of the things that we wanted to do was just to update the language, make it more user-friendly, a flow of the information that sort of has some relationship to the application itself, so filling it out would make more sense. And also, as we've gone through and trying to make sure that the language reflects the town's plans and goals and values, and I think you'll see some of that in the language that we're recommending, and also taking into account the current economy and also some of our more recent history or experience with loans. So we've added language and things that we've learned more recently. So those are broadly the changes. The probably the most specific changes, the increase from $10,000 per job loan to job ratio to $25,000, and that's consistent with the state's guidelines. So I think I feel good about that. The ESC has reviewed this. Again, we've been talking about it for about 6 months now, and they recommended to adopt the changes. The one thing that I want to point out real quickly is that you all have an email in front of you, some comments that we got from the chamber this afternoon, and some recommendations. And I think that it's a good point in a particular section. I don't have the section in front of me. We talk about emergency funds for capital needs, and I think fully the intent of the ESC was capital as in terms of cash to do operations or buy goods. So, but their recommendation, and I think you'll see it in the memo in front of you, and I have it here, is to change the language to say capital and operating, just so that there's no confusion between, you know, what you could do with emergency funds. So you have that in front of you. And also Kristen Smith is here this evening with the chamber and asked me to ask the mayor if she could make a comment. But that's the information you have in front of you this evening, and I'll be happy to answer questions.
Where in the document are the emergency funds specified?
It's criteria, it's toward the end, number
15.
Yeah, 15. We talk about microloans be made available, and the whole intent there really came out of Weaver Street, and when there was, you know, question about if we could provide some kind of small loans, mm-hmm. and we would have had to go through some kind of amendment like this to make that happen. So if something like that comes up again in the future, we've got some mechanism for making that happen. In number 15, it would say emergency capital and operational needs.
And you believe that that's what ESC meant in the discussion, because that's not what I got from the discussion.
It is what I, because I, okay. It's what I meant when I wrote it. Capital as in cash. If there was emergency cash needs.
Well, but I think the operating.
Hold on.
If it's about this, I'm finishing.
Go ahead. We're just trying to clarify.
Well, you know, my sense was at ESC that it did not include the operating.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I mean, very clearly, folks were concerned that was not going to be something that could be. We could really, you know, have enough detail.
Well, I think that in a typical loan, operational costs are not something that the, mm-hmm. the ESC wants to cover with mm-hmm. a regular loan. But I'll just put out there to you that in the case of a, and I hate to use Weaver Street as an example, but a Weaver Street, I mean, clearly there was loss of sales, and cash infusion is what she needed. And it would have been, and I'm talking about the Red Hen, there was sort of a discussion about that, cash. It would have been operational. It would have been so she could pay her light bill and pay her rent and those kind of things. So,
Red Hen was discussed at ESC?
As a possibility of...
So you're discussing it.
Right. There was, okay. You know, the idea of a small loan to those folks was floated as a way to help through those times.
But they never approached us. I mean, you know... Mm-hmm.
And they left town, like,
right.
2 months later.
Right.
Well, they never approached y'all.
Right. But there were discussions. Capital, when I wrote it, capital was cash infusion in my head.
Would anything prevent, a business to come and ask, you know, similarly the way the folks... along Weaver Street with the sewer, come and ask separately. I mean, you know, does it have to say that operating expenses for businesses to come and ask? I mean, I'd rather leave that, you know.
If I could jump in on that question, I mean, I guess the
request.
I don't have a strong opinion about this, but it seems to me the problem is that if the point is to address emergency type situations, to say, well, you could come to the Board of Aldermen and request a change to the policies so that you could get the loan, is like it kind of misses the emergency nature of the situation. But if you see what I'm saying, like, I mean, in other words, by writing it in here in advance, you kind of shorten the process for a person in that position. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I kind of have some reservations about the notion of saying operating cash, unless they're going to be able to somehow point to a way that, you know, I mean, in other words, right. We don't want it to be good money after bad.
That's exactly right.
So I don't know whether there would be a way to kind of make it. I'd like to hear from the folks from the Chamber of Commerce, too, before we come to a conclusion about this, but a way to write some language in there that would say operating cash when there's a, under circumstances where there's sort of a good explanation for why some short-term cash will actually solve the problem, as opposed to kind of delaying, merely delaying the problem into the future. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, if we were going to do that, I'd want to be able to bring that back to the ESC, quite
sure.
frankly, because I think you're really talking
sure.
about creating a floater of some kind. And
well, we could do the one thing tonight and refer the other question back to the ESC. I'll just point that out. Was there somebody else? Sammy, and then let's hear from...
I was just wondering about the... I noticed that in the previous loan, there was a requirement of an actual need because mm-hmm. banks were not supporting the proposed business. And in this economic environment, I can only imagine that being worse. And so I don't see why it would hurt to keep that as a requirement. There's just a bigger pool of people who and businesses that are going to be turned down. If there's a business that is strong enough that it does get supported by a bank, then I think we should encourage that to be a priority. So I would be curious to hear what the reasoning was from the commission or from Annette and for us to consider keeping that if it's recognized that it's probably worse of a situation now that it may make sense to prioritize this for businesses that are really in need.
I feel like I have a good answer to that question,
sure.
but let me recognize.
Let's finish this.
Well,
something different.
You know, I've for a long time had a reservation about the language that's in there right now because it's almost as if it's saying basically that in order to get this loan, you have to be turned down for another loan.
Mm-hmm. That's how it was.
Right.
Well, you know, anytime you're turned down for a loan, it has a negative effect on your credit rating. You know, I mean, in other words,
so we're setting people up.
It essentially requires that you apply for a loan that you almost know that you're not going to get and injure your own credit rating and be formally declined in order to apply for a loan from this, which I understand why that. What the concept there is, but it just seems like it doesn't work very well in practice. And the other thing I'll say is that, you know, most people who borrow from this fund end up paying, you know, something like 3-4% versus they might pay 5-6% from a private lender. And while saving 2% by borrowing from the town sounds like an attractive option, in my experience, the reality is that this process takes longer. It does, because we have tougher underwriting standards because we need to than a private lender does. And that when money is available from the bank from 5% or money is available a good bit slower at 3% from the town, that the answer is you want to go ahead and take it from the bank at 5%. So I think it's kind of an unnecessary step in the process because you're asking people to injure themselves for their credit record, and realistically, people don't bother to go through all of the hoops that we go through when a private market lender is available for only a few points more.
So what do we do?
Can we hear from the chamber, and then I think Lydia's next.
Oh, I just got here, and it's late.
All of you should have received this email, but I want to underscore the point and read our statement. Appreciate your time, and thank you to Annette. Mr. Mayor, members of the Board of Aldermen, thank you for hearing tonight's recommendations to modify and update the application guidelines for Carbo's Business Revolving Loan Fund. We support Carbo's effort to provide startup capital for small enterprises, and your fund is a model for our community and our state. We encourage you to adopt these changes with one minor modification. In Attachment B1, Item 15, we would like you to consider modifying the bullet reading Emergency Capital Needs to read Emergency Capital and Operating Needs. Such a loan to support operating needs could be used to support an organization who had emergency cash flow needs due to a circumstance such as natural disaster, road closure, or sewer line failure. The Chamber remains a committed partner with the Town of Carbo in pursuing your joint goals to double commercial square footage in the downtown from that existing in the year 2000, as stated in Carbo Vision 2020, and also to support sustainable business enterprises that are environmentally and socially responsible, as stated in the proposed criteria revolving loan fund. I appreciate your consideration and happy to answer any questions. Thanks for your time.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa.
All right, is there, somebody have a motion? Oh, wait, no, Lydia is next.
I just had it.
And then does anybody have a motion, if Lydia doesn't make one?
Okay. Folks, one thing I wanted us to consider adding to this criteria, you know, one of our criteria on here is an agreement to comply with Title I requirements, blah, 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 Federal Labor Wage Acts. I'd like for us also to include some type of requirement that businesses that we loan our money to include as part of their company policy a non-discrimination clauses against LGBT folks.
Here, here.
And the reason, again, is just as we're looking into having such a requirement for entities that we grant monies to during our, you know, grant process, we're getting ready to go through, I'd like for us to include it as to companies that we loan money to as well, mm-hmm. because currently on the federal level, on the state level, there is no protection at all for LGBT folks. There's only what we can do at the local level. And so I'd like to see if we can include that as one of the current guidelines, or as one of the proposed guidelines.
Do you have something written? Or you could quickly?
I can.
You can do it?
I could quickly do it. Or okay. I think we have language to cover it.
That's pretty much standard.
We can pull the language out of our standard contract language and just make it a requirement of the revolving loan agreement.
All right.
Great. Thanks, Matt.
Sammy?
Just 2 points. In response to Mark, still in question, not because I'm taking a position, but I understand the argument. You know, it's a negative mark on your record. We want to discourage that, too. There may be a way in which if it's an easy mechanism, whatever is reported to the banks could be reported to us. Maybe that's too much burden on staff. But if it's above the threshold, then to encourage them to approach banks. And also, you know, banks probably have higher loans now. So, you know, if the climate for getting out a loan is of a higher percentage, then of course, like, invite them to get a loan from our revolving loan fund. We don't want them to, you know, be paying the banks either. So that may be something to consider to make it so that businesses that can, because there's a limited pool that we have and we want to maximize it for those who are most need, that may be a way to do it. The other question I had was, you know, as a town, we have a policy to encourage locally owned businesses as much as possible, and it's surprising to me to not see anything in here that speaks to that, except for, you know, having obviously that the business be located within town limits, but there's nothing speaking to encouraging locally owned businesses. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage us to consider adding something to mm-hmm. that effect.
Mr. Attorney, do you have any thoughts about that?
It doesn't immediately send off alarm bells, if that's what you're asking me.
That's what I'm asking you.
I don't think so. I mean,
okay.
Only other than to what, you know, what extent is locally owned, does that mean they can live in Chapel Hill, Orange County? I mean, because we have we have business owners who
right.
live in Chapel Hill.
Yeah,
so.
I agree. It would be, you know, it's
Well, we could have it as a kind of stated consideration without being a kind of
hard
and fast.
Right.
But there could be a hard and fast if it's beyond
the Potter
North Carolina. You know, that's a very clear hard and fast one.
But what if somebody wants to come here and open a business? It's very cool.
Right. The point is
there's
a philosophy for why we encourage and prioritize locally owned over really cool businesses, like cool.
I'm saying like a local.
Well, you know, I just to give you one example. So, I mean, the person who is the I think single largest shareholder in Fleet Feet, for example, bought the company. Whatever, X years ago, mm-hmm. like 5 years ago or something, bought the company. And prior to that time, I believe he lived somewhere in California. But he bought the company and moved here to where it was headquartered.
Right.
And I'm not sure whether he's a resident of the town of Carrboro or whether he lives in Orange County. But anyway, he lives within within like 2.5 miles of where we're sitting right now.
Right.
You know,
Is
that local or is that not local?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you see what I'm saying?
Why don't we not discuss that tonight and stage it in a way so that when a loan application comes in, that someone, one of us thinks is local and one doesn't, then we can figure it out.
That's what I was saying. You know, I mean, I think that should be a criterion that we would consider, but it's maybe a little difficult, especially on the fly tonight, to decide on some hard and fast rules about that.
Yeah.
But there again, I mean, if what we're going to do is refer the question of operating capital back to the commission, you know, this could also be an issue that we refer back to the commission for some further advice about, you know, how do we address this?
The ESC always looks at how local, you know, the applicant is.
But it wouldn't hurt to include that as a criteria and a guideline.
I think it's understood.
Right, but not everybody was born here. Like, I wasn't born here.
But it is understood on the commission.
Believe it or not, I think it was not actually.
I would have been if I could have, but I wouldn't. Yeah.
If she'd had to say so, she would.
So, and the other thing is just, you know, I know the board has the sentiment, but just, what doesn't hurt, and when talking about attracting sustainable business enterprises that are environmentally and socially responsible, it wouldn't hurt to include projects that serve the underserved, disadvantaged populations, or that are mission-driven and fulfill a social and/or environmental need are encouraged, just to be consistent.
Sure.
All right. So, is there somebody have a motion?
I move we refer this back to ESC to consider the 2 points and plus the additional language that Sammy has just proposed.
I second.
And then it come back to us. Oh, and, including okay. that, I guess one of the 2 points was the local ownership. Okay.
And mine too.
Right. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And Lydia's point.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that was seconded by Randy. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously.
I think she left. Did Alia leave for good, or did they just go out for a little bit? Did
they
Krista,
looked like they were leaving.
Did they have to go?
Did Krista and Alia leave for good?
Why don't we find out during our 3 minute break?
We're gonna recess for 3 minutes. Would you find out for us real quick whether they're still here or not? Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. All right. We have completed item D3 on the agenda. I see and understand that we have a number of items left on our agenda tonight. My proposal is that we are going to go ahead and take them in the order in which they're presented on the agenda as originally printed. However, understand that there is somebody here who is under the age of 14, and also her mother is here. So I would like to recognize either or both of them to come and address the board about the library issue right now, if they would like to do so, so that reasonable bedtimes can be achieved.
Thank you so much for making it possible for us to be here. I would just like to say that I joined the Friends board this year after going to the Carborough Library, I would say, 9 weekends out of 10 for the last decade of my life. So, I really don't think that I ever understood how dedicated my fellow board members are to getting a library for our town. And I understand that there are factors right now that make this, you know, a really important time to move forward with this project. And I know that, that I'm talking about the funds and the wonderful support, but, you know, I just want you to know I also see it in our very own board that, you know, we have so much dedication and have been working for so long, some of us, that I think now is the time to move this process forward. Thanks.
Okay, so I would just like to say that I think I really like the idea of a freestanding library in downtown Carborough. I think that I really value the library because I have spent, like, a good fraction of my life there, literally. I remember, like, when I was really young, we would go to, like, see Miss Moon and, like, so then now I just hang out and I browse and I'll spend, like, weekend afternoons there, so I really like it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right.
Thanks for coming back, Alia.
Good job.
Good job, both of y'all. Here. That was the second greatest moment of the night.
Yeah.
Well done. The greatest moment of the night was the town attorney's reaction to your referring to when you were really young.
But you are really old. I am really old. Seasoned, that's right, I'm seasoned.
Nice.
Yes, exactly. Highly experienced, I like to think of him as being. Thank you all. All right, we will now turn to agenda item D4. Mr. Manager?
Item number 4 is a request to modify the terms of a revolving loan for the owners of Second Wind Juice Bar. I believe Annette has a few words.
Just real quickly, Second Wind is proposed to be open by April. They've been working very hard. I guess you can see them downtown.
Mm-hmm.
They've met all the requirements of this Board of Aldermen that put some conditions on the of the loan. They have the cash, but they came back to the ESC and asked for a modification to their loan criteria and wanted to move their payments back to not start for 4 to 6 months, and the ESC had a conversation about that and came back with a recommendation to allow them just to pay interest payments for those for the first 4 months. So and those payments are about $99 to $100. It depends on when you start compounding daily at some point. So, but that is the recommendation from the ESC in front of you. And also the applicants, although they aren't here now, I spoke to them right before the meeting. Very tired. They've been working very hard, and they said that they are totally fine with the ESC's recommendation. So.
All right. Is there a motion?
Move the ESC recommendation.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, are passing unanimously. Their storefront is looking great.
It does look great.
So we look forward to the business opening. All right. That brings us to agenda item D5.
Item number 5 is a presentation of the final report for the Northern Study Area Design Workshop.
Am I right in understanding that our goal here is to receive the report and then we will refer it to committees and then we'll come back for further discussion? Is that what we're doing this evening?
Well, the Durham area designers have a presentation they would like to give.
No. That's fine. I mean, this isn't the time when we're going to go over it with a fine-tooth comb.
We're going to decide about whether or not this is what we're doing.
Okay. Part of the agenda item is scheduling a future workshop.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Just some background information. The Northern Study Area Design Workshop, as facilitated by the Durham Area Designers, was a public event sponsored by the town with the purpose of gaining community insight into the Northern Study Area rezoning recommendations from the, and I'm only going to say this once, Northern Study Area Plan Implementation Review Committee.
That's a perk.
It's a perk. All right. I practiced that all afternoon. It was proposed by staff and agreed to by the Board of Aldermen that a design workshop would engage stakeholders in the process of imagining mixed-use projects in the NSA, thereby informing future land use regulations. The workshop invitations were widely distributed by mail, newspapers, posters, and tweets. Additional information about the background of the INSIPERC, which is separate from the workshop, is on attachment B of our agenda item. It's been almost a year since the workshop was held, and so it's about time. We're all here together. The Durham Area Designers will be presenting some of the story of the event. Just a little background, the INSIPERC committee recommended 5 possible areas of study. All of these property owners were invited, and only one responded, and that was the owner of the property E, which is Parker Lewis or the Zinn Brothers. And so, fortunate for them, this was the chosen focus area for the workshop. Results, well, the Durham Area Designers will present them, and it's very exciting. Staff recommendation is that the board accept the report and consider a follow-up work session to evaluate its contents in detail prior to defining new regulations. And before you do that, make sure you give the staff plenty of time because we're going to need to do some homework. So if you don't have any questions, I can just present the Durham Area Designers.
We probably do have questions, but after they go.
Okay. All right. Let's see here. Let me cue them up. There you go.
Good evening. I'm Steve Gaddis. I'm with the group Durham Area Designers, and the town of Carborough hired us to facilitate this workshop, which we did back in February of last year. Work on the Northern Study Area Small Area Plan began back in 1993, 20 years ago. The plan was formulated and was accepted and adopted in 1998. One of the key phrases that came out of the plan was that we were to that is the town of Carborough was to encourage village scale development. Our particular workshop was actually put in place to study how we could come up with a village-scale development. In 2007, and I didn't practice, so I'll just say in 2007, the Board of Aldermen appointed the Northern Study Area Plan Implementation Review Committee, and subsequent to its work, the staff recommended to you that we hold this design workshop that the purpose of which was to come up with a village scale development. Let's see here. That's what I just said. I think it's interesting that between 2000, he was talking about how long it had been since we'd had the workshop, but between 1998 and 2007, nothing happened either. So the site chosen, you may not be able to see it very clearly here. It's got a black outline around it, but you'll see it a little better in the next slide. It's at the intersection of Eubanks Road and Old North Carolina 86. There is one interesting thing that's in play here. There is a current NCDOT plan to change the alignment of the road to create a safer intersection, particularly that's of concern now with the school there. And the yellow arrow is pointing to one alignment that has been proposed by the DOT. This workshop, we allowed people to go ahead and think about alternate alignments because DOT said that they would entertain other suggestions. Staff specifically wanted the workshop. They particularly wanted us to look at modifications to the village mixed-use ordinance, which is zoning district. They wanted us to develop appropriate street sections for new streets and roads in the northern study area, and they were looking for the creation of a form-based overlay ordinance for the mixed-use village design. On the 2nd of February, we had a public input session, which laid the groundwork for the design workshop. There were about 25 citizens there. Then on the 26th, we had 45 participants. We broke them into five groups. Most all of the facilitators that were at that session are sitting here in the room. And so we worked for 6 hours on ideas for the design of a mixed-use village. I'm going to give you a very quick summary of the results. Team one brought up a theme that sounded through every team, which was everybody was especially concerned about the volume of traffic in that area, and many people couldn't get past that for the first hour. And finally, when they realized that maybe there were ways to address that, then they said, well, maybe it is possible to look at what a village mixed-use development would look like here at this intersection. This team also came up with something that I think was repeated often. One, they said they want to attract small businesses such as medical offices, a retirement community, hospice, a restaurant, or a community store, but not a strip center. And they wanted to create a variety of housing, single-family, on small lots, townhouses, and multifamily. I should point out that this retirement community, it was an idea that seemed to get floated around and became one that nearly every team included in one way or another. This team particularly also wanted the design to serve all ages of the community. Their plan, and you'll see it better in the report, which is online, which you have personally, this is a diagram of it. Team two, as I said, traffic, everybody talked about traffic. And in fact, this team said they didn't feel that there could be a vibrant mixed-use community because of the traffic volumes on Eubanks. They did feel, though, that it might be appropriate as a retirement community. And their recommendations, they first said, let's just leave the alignment as it is at Eubanks and shave the crest of the old 86 south of the intersection to improve sight lines. They were unique in saying they wanted to preserve a 100-foot buffer on either side of Old 86. This team most clearly was very concerned about the rural character of that section of the road. Again, retirement community came in. This is a picture of their plan. And, in fact, in this plan, they actually did show a relocation, even though they would have preferred not to. And you can see the 100-foot buffer along Old 86. Team 3 looked for a mixed-use development that would be on either side of a rerouted Eubanks school, and it would have strong connections to the school and to the future park. Again, they identified traffic as a major problem. And one of the things that they were going to do was to create a village commons at the northwest corner of Eubanks and the Dromoland intersection, and wanted to see the Greenway Trail pass through it and on into the Duke Forest, which is to the north side of the property. again, they talked about the retirement community, an idea that, as I said, took hold and everybody really seemed to like it. Our method of working at these types of events is that we work through a first session and then we have sharing, and we make it always very clear that one of the rules is that if you see a good idea from somebody else, it's fine, steal it, make it better. So this is why I think that this particular idea got so much traction. Picture of their drawing that they came up with, the layout that they had. These are all labeled in the final report. You can look at them in more detail there. Team 4 had a particular interest on the rural character of the land around the development site, but they did endorse this idea of a human-scale village mixed-use center. Traffic was another one of their issues. And this group wanted to swing Eubanks from the traffic circle in sort of a clever but complicated thing. There is some property, you saw how irregularly shaped the subject property was. They were going to go through the corner of someone else's land and then trade them land that would be found from the abandoned right-of-way when you do move Eubanks off of its current path. They also wanted to develop a child care center. They were really looking at a connection, strong connection with the school, and seeing that there was potential clientele from there to support local businesses in a village setting. They also wanted to create the retirement community. And like everybody, they were really more interested in getting neighborhood-focused commercial rather than destination commercial. And they wanted to minimize parking and light pollution. This is a picture of their scheme. And Team 5 had the strongest sense of wanting to maintain the rural character along Old 86. And they did one thing which they pulled a village center off of and away from Eubanks Road, moving sort of to the interior of a development. That was their response to the concern about traffic. And as I've repeated here, that they wanted to move off of Eubanks. They also wanted to do the retirement community. But then they were looking at the possibility of, in conjunction with the retirement community, developing a health medical complex in that area, clinics that would both address the elderly as well as the general population. And this is a picture of their scheme. There's a final report, which I think the body of it is 53 pages, and I don't know how many pages of appendix there are. It is posted on the web for everybody to look at. It's at the Planning Department homepage. And it contained a summary of the design ideas that we heard during this workshop. And we organized those ideas under four themes that seemed to recur. One is looking at neighborhood scale and character. The second was looking at building types and their character. The third was street design. And the fourth was one that moved a little bit outside of design into economic development, and that was looking at viable and desirable businesses that might be located there. Following the workshop, we followed up on the request to develop street sections, and we derived them from NCDOT's standards for traditional neighborhood streets, which is a set of standards that's been developed for quite a few years. They just have not, to our knowledge, ever been put into use anywhere. They're very good standards, but we recommend that these sections that we derive from them should be used. And finally, in one of the appendixes of the report, there is a number of recommendations on how to amend the village mixed-use zoning district to create a form-based code, which was one of our charges. For those of you that are not familiar with form-based codes, they are codes that tend to look not at uses and regulating uses, but regulating the shape of buildings and their position vis-a-vis public space. And I think that section of about three pages is well worth absorbing. And it is interesting that the village mixed-use zoning district, as is now in the books, does have a lot of real possibilities for being changed and developed into this form-based type of zoning code. I appreciate this chance that we had to work with you. If any of you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
All right, great. Before we entertain any questions like that, I've got two people who are signed up to speak on this issue, so Let me recognize them, and we may call you back up in a minute to field some questions from the board. Joseph Woodman, did you have a comment you want to make? Yeah, if you would, just so people at home can see you and hear you.
Hi, I'm Joe Woodman, and I'm a resident of the neighborhood right across the, this is the Karen Woods neighborhood. We're on Lot 1, that homestead, little homestead home. And I just want to briefly register really my own opinion. I attended that the morning session of that workshop with DAD sponsored. I was not able to, had to leave town, so I was not able to participate in the planning session, the team breakouts. I just want to register a personal bias that I'm fine with certain types of development, mostly residential. It's a fairly small tract. It's just hard for me to imagine that we need any more destination retail. To the east, you've got a growing and vibrant destination retail community in Chapel Hill North. To the north, a few miles, undoubtedly Boone Village is going to be built out. It already is. Just a couple miles east, you've got Walmart and Home Depot on New 86. And to the south, of course, you've got Carrboro. My understanding when I moved in to that neighborhood that it was pretty much a buffer zone. And I think that character should be preserved. I think any kind of destination retail is just more redundant consumerism that really you don't need. So if it's a perhaps neighborhood retail or some type of maybe perhaps a child care center, I think folks represented talked about a senior center. I don't mind commercial enterprise. I just really this area. I came to live in this area because it seemed like a sensible answer to a lot of just sort of blatant consumerism, and that's part of the reason I moved out there. And I just don't think we really need any more of the destination stuff. We got plenty of it, and so I just wanted to go on the record saying that. And I don't think that was terribly fairly represented in the team breakouts. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. John Gant.
Hi, I'm John Gant. I also live in a neighborhood right near the property that Omar and his group are working on. I think Joe kind of covered the local sentiment of the current residents, so I'll just speak briefly about the workshop, which was very well facilitated, and the DAD group had a lot of people there to help educate us. At the beginning of the six-hour workday, there's no doubt, as was mentioned, we started off with a lot of issues and concerns from those of us who came to join the workshop. And so we got a lot of those expressed. When I've briefly read through the report in the past day, I think a very few of those items were brought forward, mainly because a lot of the people who did express their concerns in the morning left after a few hours. Because after those were kind of heard once, the DAD group really tried to bring it into an educational workshop to help us learn about the mixed-use village and how architectural styles are important and that kind of thing. And so in the afternoon when we got to the breakout sessions, which are, I think, very well reported, that was really about take this property and make it into the best mixed-use village you can. And don't think about surrounding property, and don't think about whether or not it could be single-family homes anymore. But just imagine the best mixed-use village you can. So that's my conviction that I'd like to share. I think it represents one viewpoint very well, and it represents some of the concerns that came up in that afternoon workshop. But I think if there were more discussion there might be even more opinions that could be recorded from all the different stakeholders. Thank you.
Thanks. All right. I see one of the owners of subject properties here. He's not signed up quite yet, but he arrived a little bit late. Would you like to address the board? Come on up, Mr. Zinn.
Thank you for your time. Watching the Carolina basketball game simultaneously with your board, and just ran up here as quickly as I could.
Which was more exciting?
I got to say, the Carolina game just a little bit more. So excited.
Good news. Good news.
Is
there a final score?
Let's be honest. We're winning. We're up by 12 when I left. But anyway, trying to take up too much of your time. Michelle, welcome to the board. I don't know you, but look forward to getting to know you. Many of you know this. I've said it before. I grew up at Cal Vander. I grew up in this area that my brother and I own approximately 27 acres, a significant tract. When the town of Carrboro approached all the landowners, maybe six significant landowners, maybe 20 acres or more, we were the one group of landowners that said, yes, we're interested in going through your trial process and seeing what we come up with. So that's how this track came to be studied and played with. I've seen a lot of growth in the town, and I used to travel down Eubanks Road when it was a dirt road, and now we have an elementary school there. We have a future middle school, and then we'll have a large park off of Eubanks, off of Old 86. And obviously there are lots of different opinions out there, and I think if you were to poll, 100 people, you'd probably have 50 different opinions in terms of what should be done with the land. But when we purchased the land, it was and still is zoned R1. We knew that the school was coming, and just as much as Weaverdale Road was once a very rural, pastoral scene, I foresee Eubanks and see the growth that's happening in Eubanks, and certainly hope to develop this parcel with more density than it's currently zoned. DOT has approached us with a road realignment plan. I don't know if we could get the slide back up here that shows their current realignment plan. We have not given our approval to any realignment at this point, but in order for that land to be developed one way or the other, whether it's R1 or whether it's VMU or whatever it may be, that road, which crests over Old 86 right before it meets Eubanks, is very unsafe. So one thing that I'm interested in seeing and hearing from the board about is kind of that's their proposed realignment right there. Right there, Eubanks Road currently comes like this right here, okay? And there's a crest in the hill, and it's very unsafe. And so I'm kind of interested in hearing from the board as we move forward about Eubanks realignment. One way or another, it needs to be realigned, whether it takes this trajectory or whether it goes to the north and comes out like this. So I'm interested in moving forward, getting the board's opinion on Eubanks Road realignment, and DOT currently has funds in place for this project. Funds aren't going to be there forever, but I'd like to move this forward as a discussion so that we can, number one, get Eubanks Road to a safe place, approximately moving the intersection up 400, 500 feet from its current crest right now. The second thing I'd like to say is I do have, we discussed lots of different ideas and alternatives, and it's true, just like John says, we threw out, the DAD said, well, let's take this property, let's develop it, and let's see what we come up with. So, we have retirement facilities, we have, VMU, we have office building, we have multifamily, we have single-family neighborhoods. There's a lot of different balls in the air. And I'm interested in getting some feedback from you guys in terms of what you would like to see out there. I am interested in moving forward in a rezoning for this property. And I know there are a lot of different players involved. But I am interested to kind of get your temperature. I have individuals with retirement facilities, individuals who own, you know, are interested in putting multifamily out there, individuals. There's an old church site out there. I'd like to kind of, excuse the term, but resurrect the church site. I'm interested in possibly putting, you know, an office building out there. And, again, there are a lot of different people with a lot of different opinions, a lot of different players, residents of Carrboro, residents that live in the area. So, you know, I'm interested in moving forward with that. I know it's not going to be a rapid and quick process, but I would like to get that ball rolling.
Lydia and then Dan.
Omar, you were talking about the two possible ways that the alignment could happen.
Mm-hmm.
Are those two ways based on you looking at topography and everything, or is that, are those two ways that DOT has suggested, or?
Well, DOT, this hill right here, I mean, it cannot physically be cut down.
Right.
You know, some people said, oh, we just need to leave it where it's at and cut this road down. There's no way that you can, you know, gain 20 feet of grade there by cutting through this hillside. So the alignment, according to DOT, needs to move approximately 400 to 500 feet to the north, and it can either be done through this trajectory, and I've also asked them to explore, you know, there's this roundabout right here, excuse me, and I've also asked them to explore kind of taking this roundabout through this area right here. So those are the two main paths that, you know, we only own so much land up to this point right here, so it can only be between, you know, it's kind of like Steve Martin and the Joker. It can be between the Chiclets and the Erasers. You know, I mean, there's not a whole lot of give.
So is that decision, am I understanding you to say that decision is ultimately DOT's, or is it?
I mean, it's DOT interfacing with me, but, you know, I mean, before I could tell them tomorrow, yes, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll work out the land agreement work, you know, but I'd like to get, you know, the board's, you know, green light, so to speak. They'd like to do the work during the summer when school is out. And, you know, here we are almost in March. So, I mean, they wanted to do it last summer. I mean, they approached me, you know, last year prior to this time, and, you know, I'm not ready to make a decision. I'd like to interface with you guys, talk about it. It's going to be a long-term decision. It'll be there forever, but this intersection must be made safer for the residents here, as well as if I'm obviously ever going to do anything here, it must be safe intersection.
Right. Yeah, I understand the need to move it. It was just the two choices is what I was asking.
Yeah, that's kind of what they presented to me, and they presented one option to me, and I said, well, let's also look at this northern route coming off of the roundabout.
Dan, and then Sammy, and then me.
So, Omar, you were acknowledging that it might take some time to work through this process, but you were also talking about having some people who already, it sounds like, expressing interest.
Correct.
In some projects there. We're being recommended a process in which we would develop more of a form-based code under the BMU to put into place for this property, and that could be a very long process, as you're familiar with the rate at which we progress around here.
Yes.
So I guess my question is, my first question, then I have another question for you. My first question is, you know, whether from your perspective, you know, if you may, in the relatively near future, have some very specific project in mind, if there might be a better approach in terms of getting things set up for you more expeditiously than what's being recommended to us. Like, perhaps we don't need the form-based code if you already know what you want to do, say, sometime in the next year, and are going to come in with an application for a very specific project.
Okay.
Can you comment on that?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I've had this vision of having components out there that are, A, somewhat non-threatening. In other words, nothing that's going, you know, not a a large-scale retail is going to bring tons of traffic and tons of people through there, but something that is complementary to the existing elementary school, future middle school, and the park, such as retirement facility, preschool, multifamily, you know, aftercare slash yoga slash coffee, you know, something where people can go and gather, not like a Weaver Street, but where they can go and gather, you know, have child care, do what they need to do, elderly interfacing with the elementary school. And I do have some commercial realtors who have approached me with interest in multifamily and assisted living as well as church use, because they know about this land. So, I mean, taking the whole form-based code and going through that path and that process certainly takes a long time. What I don't want to do is say, okay, well, I'm looking for conditional use rezoning, and, you know, let's see what happens. You know, I mean, if these people want to commit to a project, I'd like to have the zoning in place. Of course, there's you know, a lot of players involved, so I don't know how expeditiously you can move and at the same time create the zoning that's in place, but, you know, that would be ideal for me. When I first started this charrette process and I attended all three, I said, well, this could be 5 years out. It could be 7 years out. Well, things have continued to morph in the world of banking and in the world of finance, and I've told many of you, you know, I don't own this land outright. You know, there's a note on this land, and, you know, I can't hold it forever, and so I'm looking to do something with it, apart from just renewing a note every 2 years. So that's kind of where I hope that answered your question.
It doesn't, but it clarifies what I was asking.
Okay.
My other question is, so separate from all the issues to do with the actual development of the property, are you wanting us to consider the road realignment so that that could be worked on this summer?
Yes, the sooner we can discuss the road alignment, the better.
Okay. And Trish, are you able to advise us this evening on what, you know, whether that's feasible from the planning department standpoint and what would be involved?
I think that we could certainly bring back, you know, the item for discussion of the all of the issues associated with various alignments. And we've been in communication with DOT as well about the options they've prepared. So we could certainly bring that back and discuss it.
Thank you.
Sure.
Sammy, and then me.
So, you know, one of the reasons for this charrette and the seeking for properties in the northern area was precisely to provide more commercial opportunities for people who live up there, because it's purely residential at the moment. And of all the things that you've listed, not many of them are mixed use or providing those kinds of opportunities, like for people to office space. I mean, some of them do, you know. I mean, there's work that's going to be provided with retirement communities and assisted living and those kinds of things. But I would encourage consideration of, you know, other opportunities for people who are living nearby to get there in a walkable way. And this is speaking to, I guess, Joe's comment, you know, not make it a destination place, but really something that can serve the residents of the northern area of Carrboro for, you know, minimizing their needs to jump in their car and driving to wherever. So, and it's a hard property because it is on the edge right there, and there may not be opportunities to have more density built around it because it is on that edge. But also, I'm glad to hear that you're also considering off the roundabout, because there was one of the designs that seemed to make a lot of sense by, you know, if you could offset the property that's not yours and somehow trade it and have that cut through. It seems like a way to facilitate some of the mixed use on the road and really provide that kind of village feel, which we miss out on a lot of times because things tend to be plotted in the middle of parking lots. So to address that concern of it not being so much a destination, also for us as a board, but for you as a developer, to think about not needing to, or creative ways of not needing to provide as much parking as we tend to do, and that way try to encourage more bikeability and walkability. And I'd be curious to hear, like, what kind of time frame form-based code could be implemented. It would also be interesting to see if it could be applied to the Lloyd property. I know they're moving ahead, but, you know, to consider that as an option for that space, it seems like it has a lot of the similar characteristics where we want to, and that's not your issue, I'm just bringing it up in general. And lastly, there's the question of traffic. With the landfill closing, it may not be as significant of an issue. I just wanted to mention that. And that's it.
Jeremy, I did want to say, one of the reasons I think traffic is such a big issue, not only do so many people drive their kids to school, but it's very dangerous coming out in the morning. And so, you know, everyone's backing up because they don't want to make that left-hand turn. And that's a big reason. And I don't know if we create a roundabout there or there becomes a traffic light, but I think that's one of the big reasons for the 8 p.m. and 2:45, 8 a.m. and 2:45 p.m. traffic.
I want to jump in here and say a couple things. One is that, you know, I think if this board was interested in approaching it this way, that we could pursue a lot of what the Durham area designers and the staff are essentially recommending here without necessarily saying that anything and everything that happens on this site needs to necessarily wait for that process to be done. And I'm thinking particularly, you know, I realize this is just sort of one person's theory or idea about what might happen, but I look up at this map and, for example, you know, they show some, whoever drew that shows, for example, health-related offices, two-story buildings there toward the, I guess it's the east, more easterly end of the site. You know, and I think of that as being services that are very much for the people who live already in that area of Carrboro. And there you're talking about commercial tax base, you're talking about professional jobs that would be the type of jobs that would be compatible with folks who already live in the north end of Carrboro. You know, I don't know that you have any particular leads on that front, Omar, but if you did, I wouldn't necessarily be interested in having to wait for the development of a form-based code or whatever else in order to make some things along those lines happen, where you're talking about, you know, expanding our commercial tax base and then expanding the opportunities for folks who already live in Carrboro to work in our community as opposed to driving to Chapel Hill or Durham or RTP. So I just throw that thought out there that we can kind of, seems to me there's possibly a way to kind of pursue both of those objectives at the same, in kind of parallel track. The other thing that is real striking to me is I don't have a strong opinion about one realignment versus the other for Eubanks Road. Clearly it needs to be realigned. The intersection is way too close to the crest of that hill, and it's not just about turning off of Eubanks Road. It's about turning off of Old 86 onto Eubanks Road, too. It's a dangerous turn whether you're turning left or right onto Eubanks. You know, the site distances are just not very good. That road was built over 100 years ago, and vehicles just didn't move as fast at that time. So clearly the intersection needs to move. What I do have an opinion about is that I believe the roundabout that we worked so hard for on Eubanks Road at the entrance of Morris Grove Elementary is, I believe that's really the right direction for the entire north end of Carrboro. And I think that more of that type of intersection is what we need on Old 86, on Eubanks Road, on Rogers Road, on Homestead Road. And that with DOT looking at the possibility of a realignment to create a new intersection between Eubanks and Old 86, that we really, and this is partly about you and it's partly about Carrboro Town Government, but that all of us ought to be advocating with DOT to figure out what it would take to have a roundabout intersection between Eubanks and Old 86. And the point really being that I guess the traditional model that DOT has pursued at a zillion other intersections is to move toward a traffic light and toward kind of, you know, a whole very automobile-oriented, high-speed, how do you get people in here and out of here as fast as you can kind of model. And that, at least from my perspective, what I would like to see for Old 86, for the parts of it that are in our planning jurisdiction, mm-hmm. is not to be moving people in and out as fast as possible, but to be moving people through steadily, but at a moderate pace. And I think roundabouts like that one that we have on Eubanks Road are the right way to get that done, and that they add to the kind of pedestrian friendliness and bicycle friendliness of the intersections that make more reasonable to negotiate, especially for bicyclists. So I'd like to suggest to the board that we kind of direct the staff to explore with DOT what the possibilities are as far as a roundabout at Eubanks and 86, regardless of exactly which realignment of 86 we or of Eubanks we would be talking about.
Trish, Jeff mentioned about us not wanting the next step on this to be too soon. Could you advise us on when not too soon might be?
Well, we do have to do some homework on, we feel, in terms of providing information, further information about the various designs that you've seen in terms of the square footage, estimates of square footage mixes and that sort of thing. So, I mean, I'd really have to just look at the calendar, and it's possible that you know, we could provide something in April, maybe at the earliest, or possibly
by the end
May.
Of the calendar year?
I think so. Well, this fiscal year.
By the end of the fiscal year?
Yeah, I think we could do a report on these designs by the end of this fiscal year.
That would be great.
Okay, well, pending further discussion, I'd like to move that we request that report, that we also request staff to bring us information and whatever process we need to move forward on the realignment of Eubanks Road and Old 86, and that also include some exploration with DOT of having a roundabout intersection.
I'll second that.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, matter passed unanimously.
And I also want to move, I mentioned Lucas, that we thank Durham area designers for their fine work thus far on this project.
And receive their report.
And receive their report, yes.
All right, is there a second? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Dan,
thank you.
And your whole team, thank you.
Yes.
It was a fun project.
Thanks,
we appreciate it.
Good to see you.
All right.
Thanks so much.
Appreciate
thank
you working on it.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, ma'am.
It was raised over the weekend, I think, just a question about whether or not you wanted to have. We did not forward this to the advisory boards because we wanted to present it to the Board of Aldermen first, and so I don't know if you want any feedback from them or if you'd like them to have feedback at the next step, but I just wanted to put it out there and as a question.
I think it would be better to get it after the next step.
It seems like it's okay. Just wanted to.
We're not even sure what we're interested in yet.
Okay.
Thanks, Trish.
All right. Item D6, briefly.
Item number 6 is a continuation of a public hearing on a land use ordinance text amendment regarding the Jordan Lake rules.
Trish? All right, well summarized. All those in favor?
What do we have to be?
It's just a resolution of consistency.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Do we need a staff report on that?
I don't.
I don't know.
Is there a motion?
Yeah, I move the resolution of consistency.
Second.
been moved and seconded for the resolution of consistency. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously.
Move the draft ordinance.
Thank you for making it.
It's been moved for the draft ordinance. All those in favor, is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Well done, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff.
Okay. All right. D7.
Item number 7 is the Board of Aldermen Library Subcommittee status update and report, and this is for the board to have discussion.
As a member of the Library Committee, we were appointed in late January, and we have yet to meet. So that's kind of the status of the committee. We have received the input from the board, and we have a report here that aligns that. We are trying to find some time this weekend when Randy and Dan and I can meet.
We've got a baseline, but we just have to review it.
All right. Yes, ma'am. I have a number of people signed up to speak.
Right. I'd like to hear from the folks who have to speak, and then I know there's one or two comments I want to say to this group that's going to get together, but I would just like to kind of reiterate at least my concern that we try to get this back to the county as soon as we can.
Yeah, I guess. Speak to that also.
And we'll hear from, I guess, the public next.
We will no doubt say something similar, or some of them anyway. All right. Alex Brown and then Joel Hall Brown. No relation. Brown.
I am Alex Brown, and I am president of the Friends of the Carville Branch Library, and I am here to beg you to accept the county's criteria as they have been presented to you. These criteria are based on national guidelines. They're drafted by librarians, and they follow the same protocol as criteria for schools and other government buildings. As you know, for the first time in almost 25 years, we have a real chance to make this happen. The county commissioners want it. The county manager wants it. The county has allocated $5.5 million for it. But all of that could change in an instant. Three commissioners are up for re-election next fall. The county manager is 65 and might decide to retire. And some other need for the funds might be perceived as greater. I know it's not your intent, but the change is as significant as your subcommittee has presented or has proposed, could be or could be seen as obstructive to the process. This will be a county project paid for by county taxpayers, but you will have plenty of input as the process continues if the library is to be sited in Carrboro. But if there are too many delays, it might not be sited in Carrboro, or worse yet, it might not be sited anywhere. So I'm begging you, if you want the county to build a library in Carrboro, please tell them now that you're fine with their criteria. Thank you.
Thank you.
Joel Hall Brown and then Neris Levy.
Hey.
I actually like coming like this,
but
when you want to leave,
you
want to.
You
only got
3 minutes.
The timer is going.
Put the timer on. I think I can do it.
She's the only person that put timer on all night.
I have had the opportunity to review it, not in detail, but one of the comments ditto to what our president said, because I'm on the board of the Friends of the Carrboro Library. And what I wanted to say is when I moved here in 1992, there were two libraries. One was on Flankrin Street, which was the Chapel Hill Public Library, and the other was in Hillsborough, which was the old library. And then, of course, they built the new Central County Library. Chapel Hill, of course, built its library, and now it's expanding. And I will tell you that my family belongs to three libraries. We belong to the Chapel Hill Library, the Durham Library, and also the Carrboro Library. And we sometimes use the Hillsborough Library, but not as much since I don't practice law in Hillsborough anymore and use it as a break from going to the jail. What I wanted to say was that I think we're at a critical point where we need to look at what is the criteria, and where do you want to site it, and how long is it going to take us to site a library in the southwest part of Orange County? It is definitely an increase demographically in population, an increase in students that would use the library, and continued delay means continued problems with all those issues. So, again, I will be, of course, watching this and
hoping that you will make the appropriate decisions. But I think you really need to be realistic about what the resources that the county has at this time and at this moment. Thank you.
Thank you.
Under 2 minutes.
Under
a minute and a half, it looks like.
You can give Naris the time.
No.
Right.
Naris Levy and then Dolly Transfer.
Okay. Thank you for allowing me to have the opportunity to address this issue. I've reviewed the subcommittees or the suggestions and amendments, and I have the following comments. As a member of the Friends, I have spent the last 15 years addressing the problem of visibility, which afflicts the Carver Branch Library embedded as it is in the McDougall schools. We are constantly having to tell our population where the library is located. This is a huge strain, given that we serve a catchment area of 35,000 Southwest Orange County residents, which includes Cabra, with its large community of fairly transient apartment dwellers. Meanwhile, the main county library in Hillsborough regularly gets calls looking for the Cabra Library, which, although centrally located, is not overtly visible, embedded as it is in the Cabra Century Center. The visibility criteria suggested by the county are used by public libraries throughout the United States. They have been formulated out of experience, and this time round, we should acknowledge that fact and adhere to them. With regard to public input in Phase 3 of the criteria, the position of public input in Phase 3 of the siting process is common practice in the siting of all libraries throughout the United States of America and in public buildings such as schools throughout the state and the county. The public will have ample opportunity to address site choice when a site or sites have been put forward for consideration. Moving the public input process up on the list obstructs the site selection process, which to date has taken over 20 years. The criteria do not suggest that the town short-circuits its planning process. Meanwhile, out there, there are 35,000 Southwest Orange County residents who are paying their taxes for a full-service library. As an Orange County resident, a member of three library task forces, and a friend and user of the Cabra Branch Library, I am representing patrons and residents who need a full-service library now. The criteria proposed by the county are standard practice. The library will be a county facility using county funds paid by a lot of frustrated taxpayers who want the criteria issue voted upon, the library built, and our community served and educated as soon as possible. Gazing into a crystal ball, trying to predict the future, will not build this facility. Approving the criteria and being advised by professional librarians and library information specialists will. I ask that the town approve the siting criteria suggested by the county and allow this library project to proceed in an expedited manner. Thank you.
Excellent. Dolly Trantafillo and then Beth Volland.
And Beth has
yes. All right. Is Melva still here? Yes, Melva is here. Come on up. Melva.
I also want to thank you for the opportunity to share my thoughts with you this evening, and I'm also part of the Friends of the Library group. When I first came to Carbo, 35 years ago, the two things I looked for first were Planned Parenthood, because I'd always been a follower of Planned Parenthood, and our library. And I found neither. And I was asked to serve on the first steering board that formed Planned Parenthood in this area and stayed with them for many, many years and built that organization. And like Mary's and several others, Alec and I'm sure Joel in her heart there, I've longed for a library in our town. I always went to the Chapel Hill one. People would laugh that I was not set to really go to bookstores and purchase books. I grew up in a public library family, and so I raised my kids in the public library. I feel like this town is not complete without a public library. So we have an amazing opportunity before us. It's something the stars are finally lined up. And as mentioned, the county has put $5 million on the table. Last I checked, Carborough has not put $5 million on the table. I don't think they've put maybe a dime on the table. So this is a county library which will be paid for by the county. Again, amazing opportunity. The county commissioners, after so many years, Neri's stories are like hair-raising. You just can't believe how could we have fought this long to get a public library in our town. But now the county commissioners are aligned. You are aligned. There's money on the table, and yet we still might lose this whole thing if we drag our feet. And so like the other speakers before me, I want to say that the threat that we have before us right now, stopping this, 13 people, 13 members of the Friends of the Library have died in the process of fighting for this library. That's how long people have been involved in this and put their hearts and souls wanting to make this happen. So as mentioned, we have political changes potentially coming up, expected to be coming up, and so some of the people we could count on may not be there. Financial challenges, anywhere there's $5 million sitting out there, anybody at any moment could grab that money. So again, we are in a position where we need to move forward. So again, I ask all of you, again, as was stated earlier, that really well-trained professional minds who did a national search for criteria for citing a library. These are very smart people. They read the literature every day about what it means to be a library of the present, a library of the future. They took all these things into consideration. So when I read that list and I read the letter from the county, from the chair of the county commissioner, saying they were not looking for wholesale changes to this, this looked like wholesale changes to me. I felt like it was a bit insulting to the county that had put $5 million on the table, had their staff had been working very hard on this to get this kind of response to their hard work. So again, I want to add to what the other speakers have said. I want us to move forward in great swift. I'm sure nobody sitting here would like, because we decided we needed to spend more time thinking about it, that we might totally miss the boat. So again, I ask you to please figure out if there's any one issue that maybe you want to work on the criteria, but please, we need to move forward in great haste, again, knowing that the public will have ample opportunity once we have a good site underfoot to consider.
Thank you. I appreciate the spirit in which these various comments have been put forward, but I think that our subcommittee certainly hears you on the need to react soon on this. But I personally strongly disagree with a lot of what I heard tonight, because what I heard is that simply because the money is available now, we should be willing to make every compromise on the site. And I think that's wrong. I think it would be a huge mistake for our library to be built in some suburban location where it is accessible only to people who have motor vehicles or who have the privilege of happening to live nearby. I think if we build a library in the southern part of the county, that it ought to be in a place where a large number of people can walk to it, where people have the best kind of public transportation access to it, where it's as accessible to as many families living in poverty as possible, where as many people of color as possible have access to it. And I hear what you're saying, that the county has put money on the table, but I'd really rather that they not spend $5 million at all than that they spend $5 million to make the lives of some wealthy, predominantly white people in a suburban area more convenient. I would like for them to spend $5 million to make the lives of low-income people, of people of color, better. And it's disingenuous, honestly, in my opinion, to say that the county's put $5 million on the table. They haven't. They've put $800,000 on the table. $800,000 to buy a site. The reality is that the only site that would meet all of their criteria that would cost anything like $800,000 is out in the suburbs. It's out in places that are not accessible to Chapel Hill Transit. It's out in places where there are not a lot of people of color living nearby. It's out in places where there are not a lot of low-income families living nearby. It's not in a place that's walkable or bikeable for very many people. We don't need an $800,000 piece of land with a $4.7 million building on it. We need a $1.6 million piece of land with a, what does it add up to, $3.9 million or whatever it is, dollar building on it. I think the county is poised to make a very serious mistake by thinking about an $800,000 piece of land. It's worth paying more and getting a smaller building, if that's what we have to do in order to meet the budget, in order to serve the people who actually need the library services, in order for it to be accessible, not right now, but for the next 5, 10, 50, 100 years. It needs to be in our downtown. It needs to not be at the edge of our planning jurisdiction.
Mark, can I jump in and speak a little bit to the process?
I know I'm not on the board anymore, but I'd really like to respond.
Mark, can we not have give and take with that?
Well,
I would do it very respectfully.
I'm going to recognize Dan. I will give you alone, Joel, 2 minutes to respond in just
a
moment.
Need a minute.
Dan?
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit to the process thus far and where I think we are, which I think also speaks perhaps to the concern Lydia raised about and some of the speakers about our ability to expedite this. When we discussed this at the beginning of January, we had a number of suggestions that board members made, and there was a committee assigned to integrate those into the existing criteria to bring back to the board to review. And then Kathy wrote those up in a document that I believe, yes, is attachment B in our packet, and sent them to us. And I felt, because I thought time was of the essence, I went ahead and created the document in that's attachment A that both incorporates your all comments. I think it has everything that everyone said on January 10th or whenever that was, plus, you know, kind of an explanation so someone reading it could see where that came from. And I sent it on January 18th to Jackie and Randy, asking them for email feedback, because I wasn't sure that we needed to meet necessarily at all, because this is really an editing job, is what we were tasked with doing. But Jackie and Randy, as everyone knows, are extremely busy, and so here we are with this before us. I did mean to say that the county was very clear, I think, when we met with them back in the fall, that they wanted some serious feedback from us on these criteria. I don't think we're going anywhere beyond what the county asked. But, you know, I do think that the three of us could meet and fine-tune this document or turn it into some more readable document. But I also think, you know, given that it does, in fact, incorporate the suggestions we've made and we've heard some feedback from the community, that we could take, gosh, what time is it? 15 minutes tonight and go through it if people were so inclined and see if we were in agreement. I see Jackie doesn't want to do that. But, you know, I don't see that, you know, if the things that are on the table in January are, in fact, what we want in the criteria, then they're in here. And I don't know why there's a need to do too much more work.
Sammy and Lydia.
Don't forget Joel.
Oh, wait. I was going to call on Joel next. So let me just recognize Joel and then Sammy and Lydia. And that's going to be the last public comment we're going to receive.
At least oral comment. You might get written comment.
Well, yes. I'm not tonight.
I don't think anybody on the Friends of the Board is talking about a suburban library site where no one can get to it. But let's be clear about the demographics of Carrboro. You can mark almost anywhere. So they're not suggesting that it be put out on Eubanks Road or where Omar Zinn owns property. I think what they're saying is that you need to be realistic about the site selection. And if you think the county's going to spend $1.3 million when, in fact, they're getting less money from the state for education, I don't think that's very realistic unless you think the county is playing the lottery. It's just not realistic. And certainly there may be other members of the board who have indicated that they would rather some downtown property be income producing. And I think the Friends of the Carrboro Library, certainly while I'm on the board and have continued to do so, to be wide-ranging, making sure that everybody gets library services. That's why they've been in the fight. Not for a suburban library, but a library for everybody. And as I recall, in the siting of everything in this county, most of the time minority communities get landfills and the possibility of waste transfer stations and not libraries.
Well, that's all the more reason that I'm saying.
But it was disingenuous for you to say something.
Well, I tell you what, no, it's not, because
but
you look at no
it
you
is, it is. If you're gonna say
I have the floor now. You had the floor, I have the floor now.
But if you're gonna say money for the landfill, then you ought to ask the county to put it in the library.
I tell you what, the Human Services Center, where did they build that? They built it out where there was no bike lanes, where there was no sidewalks, where no people of color, where there were no low-income families, and where there was no bus service. And yet, who is it exactly for, supposedly? They built it there because that was the cheapest piece of land that they could find and have, so far as I can see, every intention of doing the same thing with this library.
So I'd appreciate Mark's comments. I think that we really do need to support something, and unfortunately this document doesn't reflect the goals that we have for a library in town, and it's not that much that we're changing. One of the things that we did do, even though we're not professional librarians, is we had the experience of the attempted siting of the last library, and one of the things we learned in that process is the public and the community preferences was not a part of that process. And one of the things we're changing in this document is moving that up so that we don't run into a similar situation again. So I think it would be disingenuous for us as a town to not have an input into what this document represents. And we have done everything we could. We went against most people in this community's wishes when we voted for the last site for the library. So the least we could do is set a process up that could be more reflective of our own community, and hopefully thereafter we can be less hands-on as we were in the last process. But we have learned something, and we have to reflect that in this document. As for the question of the amount of money the county is allocated to find a place within town, I think we haven't fully explored those opportunities, and even with the money that they are allocating, there may still be places we just haven't explored that fully. And lastly, I just want to say I blanked on it.
Lydia.
I have three things I want to say. The first is, I do think that the Friends make an excellent point that that we ought to strike while the iron is hot, so to say.
Yeah.
I mean, this has been people got very passionate last year. We had the commissioner's support. We still have their support, and they're asking us for this input. So I'm that's why I'm talking about just kind of moving this along as soon as we can. Although I understand the need to weigh into it. Secondly is. This list of criteria they gave us, I think the way that we've set out our suggested changes, and I recognize we still have some perhaps tweaking to do to it, I think the way we've set it out very clearly, you know, kind of comments on specifically what they had. So they can kind of clearly see it and say, oh, we see their comment, we'll incorporate it, or oh, we see their comment, we'll ignore it. It's laid out in a way, I think, that should cause them to see we took it seriously, but it's easy for them to understand. And specifically with regard to two items that were brought up, one, the visibility comment, some of what Nara said I think made some sense, and so that's caused me to kind of think about that one again a little bit in terms of visibility. But I do agree with Sammy that we did, you know, we talked about moving community preference up somewhat just based on our experience last summer, which turned out to be a real mess where we really didn't get to hear from the community or we really didn't get to weigh in until the very, very end of the process. And so I think that to the extent we can give some kind of guidance to trying to move that up a little in the process, those other than those two and moving centrality to the first phase, which I think is very important, really what we've suggested so far is somewhat minor, and I'm not sure that there would even be that much disagreement from the library about some of the from the county about some of those. And I guess thirdly, something I think we ought to think about on the board or the committee ought to think about if they meet this weekend or the next couple weeks is perhaps suggesting a process to the county about how to identify possible sites for the library. And it might be something as simple as the county putting out a call for people willing to have their property considered for the library and asking folks to meet certain criteria, size, location, whatever, price, and just kind of submit their land for consideration at some point for the county to then have a small inventory of some sites that they can then proceed with, because we all have heard about and know about different possible locations that might be considered, but in fact, those people really need to come forward to the county in some kind of a process to make it seen if their site is one that can even be considered. So those are just some thoughts I have.
Jackie, and then Randy, and let's wrap up.
Right. I was going to say that the later we go, the worse we are. We proved that last week. We don't need to reinforce that this week. So I'd like to suggest that the three of us get together this weekend and kind of hash this out. And
when is our next regular business meeting? Is it 2 weeks from now?
Yes.
Does that seem like a reasonable target time?
Yes,
to
it does.
Take some hopefully final action on this?
March 6th.
March 6th, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, let's I'll take, well, Randy.
Yeah,
you
I want to make a comment first. I absolutely agree with Jackie. I think we're close. I just want to remind folks that the criteria came out of the commissioners getting frustrated with the last process. It's not something that they had that we, you know, were not working with before. So, you know, they felt, in their terms, the vice chair said, burned by the process last time. When in fact,
that goes two ways.
Well, but the fact
three
is that
least.
We
three at least.
Yeah, right. But the fact is that we worked very hard to try and meet what they were interested in, even though we knew that there were problems with it. So I kind of
watch
you know
we.
It really yeah. bugs me to know that folks do not think that we're behind this 100%. The thing is, we don't want to rush in headlong without making sure that the community has what the community says it wants. And so community preference is, you know, very important. The question of centrality is really important. And we just want to uphold those things without, you know, rushing in headlong without making sure that we have what folks have asked us to do for a very long time.
Can I just share my forgotten thought?
Yes.
Real quick. I just think, you know, the other point is to do this as quickly as possible. I absolutely agree. So making these adjustments, you know, I don't know if there's too much more to do to it.
No.
Can we do it? If, you know, maybe not tonight, but I wouldn't be averse to doing it tonight. But If not tonight, then ASAP.
Right. Well, we are going to meet very soon.
Yeah, I think Jackie essentially moved that we're going to take this matter up for final consideration on March 6th.
That's what I moved, yeah.
And is there a second to that? It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor, you can probably say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? I pass unanimously. Thanks very much.
I know.
All right. Is there anything else on our agenda?
Kathy, would you send the three of us an email tonight? If you could send us, please, a what's that boomerang thing or
doodle,
monkey head or something.
Send her a shrunken monkey head by email, please.
With you know, choices for meeting this weekend.
When you guys work that out, let me know when you're meeting. I'll come if I can. I'm really slammed. So.
Well, no, we need to have a three-person meeting.
No, we don't.
You all can work out whether how many person meeting you're going to have by email. All the is there a motion to adjourn?
The majority of the board if they meet.
No.
It's only
going to
be
three.
I just want to last.
No, it's just the three of them. Oh, I think it's only underway. Well,
yes, it's already underway. Yeah. I'll email you tomorrow about it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I kind of made reference okay. to it during the thing.
Is there a motion to adjourn?
Can I just point out the gorilla yarn thing is a great thing. And
yeah, it looks really great.
Thank you for all who have been involved.
Yarn bombing.
Gorilla knitting
or whatever.
Yarn bombing. And I don't know if it's better than not.
Mark, did you officially adjourn now?
Randy moved and Michelle seconded. Everyone adjourned. All those in favor.
Aye.
All those in favor.